and it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Day two in our coverage of the Democratic National Convention from New York City. Man, it's been electric here. The excitement is in the air. I saw celebrities walking down the street, politicians. No, I did not see any of them. I was in my apartment in Queens watching C-SPAN. What are you kidding me? What are you kidding me? Were you watching it, Mark? Good morning. It's Mark Riley.
Good morning. And I must say, in all honesty, no. I fell asleep.
How hard does it got to be one of them early speakers, one of those afternoon speakers? You're just talking to, like, an empty room. I know what those gigs feel
like. Oh, I saw Terry McAuliffe, though. He was kind of like empty house talk.
But, you know, they just talked to, I couldn't, you know, as a comic, you know, I've talked to television cameras before, but just knowing that there are people, like, you know, setting up chairs, and they cut away to the long shots, and you'd see these people speaking, and people were, you know, having a little...
Walking around, having walking little conversations. But they're all like that. The early speakers, it's like purgatory, okay?
Dude, if I were up there, I wouldn't care if the cameras are on. I'd be like, yo, excuse me. Can we listen a little bit? How about sitting down, making yourselves an audience here?
It never works.
They do try that?
They have tried it in the past. They try and gavel the convention to order and, you know, but ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. They still try and get some semblance. Because, see, what they want to do is get a little bit of a smattering of applause so it looks good for the cameras.
Yeah.
You know, when people do these big applause lines and then there's absolutely nothing, what do people think is going on?
Yeah, I just can't believe it. Everybody, they should be... There. People should be there. Well, they out having chowder. They're out at Faneuil Hall.
They're eating. They're going sightseeing. Let me tell you something. There's nothing worse than watching politicians like city council people and stuff like that from all over the country. They all dress up like tourists. They got cameras around their necks. They got bad-looking plaid shorts on with, black socks and black shoes. And they're walking around taking pictures of everything.
I just, you know, some of those people had some good things to say. They were good. They delivered their message, and they organized. They put together their speech. They got up there, and they talked. It's so weird. I'm sitting there saying they because I don't even know who they were. I'm watching them like, who's this guy, poor guy? There's 12 people in the room.
They're prepping for 08. See, what they do is they do the little pre-prime time thing now, and then in 08, they're hoping that they'll get to move center stage. Now, one
it's
of the people who jumped straight from, you know, straight from, I guess what you would call what? In baseball, I guess you'd say, from signing a contract straight into the major leagues is Barack Obama, who we've talked to. He's got a keynote spot. Now, he is a state senator.
The heat is on.
I believe from Illinois.
Now, they're expecting him to really deliver the goods.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be honest with you. I was watching. I watched Clinton. I watched Carter. I watched Gore. I watched the Reverend.
Dave Alston.
Dave Alston.
Yeah.
Excellent. Dave Alston was great, but I'll tell you something. These are intelligent people. They're all embracing people. The whole plan to not do any Bush bashing except sort of, you know, kind of intelligent kind of asides, you know, little digs here and there, but there was no pettiness. You know, I was just blown away at just the integrity of this convention in terms of, like, you just think the Republicans have nothing. They have petty, bitter, mean bastards, a lot of them, negative. You know, they'll infuse religious speech into everything. And these guys, the Democratic convention feels, you know, it just feels compassionate, you know, embracing. Intelligence was the one thing. They spoke to people in a candid, intelligent way. Like, Clinton was genius. He was genius.
Well, you know what they were doing, Mark? They were taking the stars of their past, the Clintons, the Gore,
Hillary
the Carter,
was great.
Hillary
was great.
Clinton, and they're projecting their vision for the future by playing on the strengths of the past. A very smart strategy. What they're doing is saying, okay, here's Jimmy Carter, here's Bill Clinton, here are the people, the foundation on which the party is built.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, these foundational people, are not just going to talk about what they did. They're going to now project the party's vision for the future as being distinctly different from George W. Bush's. They don't have to bash Bush to make this point.
Because Bush's has, they got nothing.
Of course
they
got nothing.
If you really think about, like, what the Democrats are saying and the things that they're embracing in terms of the economy, in terms of health care, in terms of defense, in terms of creating a global alliance again against terrorism, of embracing, you know, people from, you know, other parts of the world and trying to open negotiations again, that there's a lot of hope there, and there's a lot of vision there. Whereas the Republicans, what do they have to draw on?
Ann Coulter.
Ann Coulter.
That's what they got.
She can't even get a gig. I mean, they're breaking the country. They're overextending the military. They've got us into a situation that is seemingly, it's disastrous. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, we're going to get into the commission report and the way this president is responding to it in a second. But, I mean, I just want to blow some more smoke up this Democratic National Convention's patootie here, because I thought it was just, I'm open to that. I'm a guy that can be moved, Mm-hmm. I mean, I will let myself be moved. And, when I hear a public speaker, I want to be moved to a certain degree.
Bill Clinton was very smart in that he really did not savage or bash Bush. In fact, he said that the electorate would be choosing between two strong men who both love their countries. And then he went on to lay out the differences between John Kerry and George W. Bush. And what struck me, Mark, the important phrase that I heard him say was that strength and wisdom are not opposing values.
Right.
And the other thing that Bill Clinton does very well is take very, very complex sets of issues and break them down quickly and simply so everybody, even me, can digest them.
And he does that by personalizing it.
Yes.
He was very willing to make himself, to sacrifice his disposition in life to make an example, to actually unashamedly say, look, I'm a millionaire. I'm one of the people that's getting this tax break.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But I tell you one thing, and I think that all other millionaires should think the same way. I'd be willing to give back that $5,000.
Yeah.
I knew it would make this country safer. I'd be willing to make these exceptions. I'm the guy that a lot of people hate because, for whatever reason, I'm making millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I've done bad things in my past. I didn't go to Vietnam. But you know what? I'm saying that I would sacrifice myself and my money to make it
to make it better for the rest of the country. The other thing that's interesting about what took place last night, Mark, is that John Kerry, by having all three of these guys on in the same night, Al Gore, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, what's he doing?
And Hillary.
And Hillary, too.
Yeah.
But he is embracing the legacy of these three, two presidents and one vice president, saying essentially, I am part of you. I am part of what you built here. Jimmy Carter has not been near a podium at a Democratic National Convention in almost 20 years.
I'll tell you, he made a really nice sort of personal appeal. He was very genuine and candid. I think he set a sort of candid tone. I noticed that they were all very human. There was not much distance between.
He, by the way, too, Carter took the most direct shots at Bush of all three of them. Carter was the one that questioned Bush's service in the National Guard as a naval officer himself. See, Carter was very interesting in getting, and my guess is that they vetted his speech or that they tried to alter his speech less than other people.
Well, I'm sure they let the guys with the least to lose take the best shots.
And the Nobel Prize winners get to say what the hell they want.
Exactly.
That's the other side of the equation.
He's going to be 81 years old, Jimmy Carter, and he's a guy that does and continues to do a lot of international peace work.
The thing that amazed me about Jimmy Carter was, when you started seeing him going all over the country building stuff, Not funding, which is great, funding the building of housing, but actually going himself and not, going with fanfares and busloads full of camera people or whatever.
No, nothing.
But going out here and doing, he did some work over in New Jersey near where I live. And it's just incredible to see the idea that this guy does this stuff with his own hand. I've always been.
You say this like
envious.
You saw, like driving by, like you were in your car, and you're like, what are they building there?
Jimmy Carter? No, actually, I saw a news report on one of the channels, and there he was, hammering stuff and didn't hit his thumb or anything.
Riley's
I'm a
on his cell phone.
For that.
Riley's on his cell phone. Jimmy Carter's
here.
Something.
Yeah, he's building somebody's house over here. But I'll tell you what, Mark.
Yeah.
Maybe the most poignant speech was delivered by the Reverend David Alston of Columbia, South Carolina. He was a swift boat crewmate of John Kerry's in Vietnam.
It was great. We should get into it when we come back after this on Air America Radio.
Want to turn your car into a stealth fighter? Invisible to all types of speed detection equipment, including radar and laser? Well, now you can with Phaser. With a range of up to 3 miles, the Phaser guarantees that you will avoid all types of speed traps. In fact, the manufacturer will even pay your fine if you get a ticket. More than a mere radar detector. The Phaser works by bouncing a mixture of radar signals and invisible infrared pulses to confuse the computer inside the radar or laser gun. The Phaser is the ultimate way to avoid costly speeding tickets. In fact, it has been made illegal in some states. So call now for details. Remember, the Phaser is guaranteed or your speeding ticket is paid. So if you never want to worry about hearing this again, go stealth and get the Phaser today.
To order risk-free, call now 866-794-6495. That's 866-794-6495. Call 866-794-6495.
Not available in California, Minnesota, Nebraska, Virginia, Oklahoma, or Washington, D.C. Certain restrictions apply to guarantee. Call for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, weighing in at 380 pounds, Spender's Terry and Edwards. And in this corner, weighing in with whatever's on their mind, the current White House champs, George and Dick.
The convention's on, and the fight's just beginning.
You call yourself a bunch of
it's pugilist, your rhetorical Rottweiler.
Catch full live coverage on Sirius Left, Right, Patriots, and Altitude. The DNC's on Sirius.
This is your Icicle Insight on the Environment.
Russell Tray, my guest, the book Politics, Pollution, and Pandas. 1970, you were the first chair of the Presidential Council on Environmental Quality. 1973, you headed the EPA. How has our perspective shifted regarding the environment?
Well, I think at the beginning, nobody knew what the environment was. When I told my parents that I was resigning as a tax court judge to become a full-time environmentalist, they thought two things. One, that I was crazy, and secondly, they didn't know what I meant. Now, that has all changed. We had a huge upsurge of public attention to the environment during my main career period, and now we see, I think, you know, that public excitement has died down. Most polls show that the American public really cares about the environment. However, the priority today is not what it was back in the 70s.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Hey, y'all, I'm Kix Brooks.
I'm Ronnie Dunn.
And we're Brooks.
And Dunn for RAD. And I've got a four-letter word for you. Don't. As in, don't drive drunk.
Yep, and I got a three-letter word for you, as in get. Get the keys.
When you see someone who's about to drive under the influence,
get the keys.
Because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
My heart is lost.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
That's right, we're in New York City. It's all right.
This isn't right. Boston?
No,
oh,
it's
sorry.
New York City. You know why? Because we're the forgotten show. We're the morning show. We're the show that's all alone in the world. We're here when it's still dark out.
Yeah, I know.
And they're all just getting up. They're probably up there, you know, they're not even, what do you
think?
They're not
up.
Getting up. They're still
sleeping.
You think
Liz is up yet?
No, they all just got the bed probably partying with Bono. And
yeah.
Not that I'm jealous. You know why? The aggravation of having to worry about missing something all day long would bother me.
Where do you think Jimmy Carter's from? He said he's like, what, 81?
He said he was going to be 81. He looks pretty good.
He looks
like,
good, yeah.
He's like timeless, you
so
know?
Where does the Nobel Prize winner party?
What do you tell? Where do they party? He went right up to bed. Are you kidding? Warm milk and a little rose. What's your name, Rosalind?
Rosalind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as I was saying before, the Clintons, Hillary Clinton, like, you know, it's like these people, I forget just, you know, how amazing the two of them are. I really, you know,
They're magnetic human beings.
But she was great, man, and you know what? They really love each other. I don't care what anybody says. I know he's been through a lot of stuff. I think that people should really commend their ability to transcend all that crap that they went through. You know, the guy was a compulsive sex person, and I think he's got it out of his system. You know what I mean? And clearly she loves the guy.
And oh, she loves the guy.
And he loves her. And
she probably didn't love him as much right after the Lewinsky thing when he was sleeping on the couch.
But you got to know, you know, it's an amazing thing because most marriages don't make it, you know, in the face of that kind of stuff.
You're
they
right.
Just don't. And because it's impossible to get trust back. But you know what? I think that it's an amazing testament to their relationship that they were able to transcend it. And I really feel like they did. I don't feel – she seems pretty happy. She seems – not carrying any baggage. She doesn't seem to be angry. And she was really passionate in her speech and in her presentation of her husband. And he was like, he didn't hold nothing back.
Well,
I guess they figured that it's 2 days before John. You know, and I don't think John's going to have any I don't think John Kerry's going to have a hard time following these guys.
Oh,
because,
no,
you know,
no.
One thing you realize about these professional politicians and these guys who know how to speak and have true points of view of their own is that even when I watched Kerry a couple weeks ago, it's like he's got his own groove and he's going to be equally as dynamic. There's just no all this talk about being upstage and this, that, and the other thing. Kerry's the guy.
A lot of that stuff about being upstage is stuff that the Republicans hope will happen.
Yeah.
Okay, they're the ones that are trying to exploit the contrast between John Kerry and Bill Clinton.
George Bush got upstaged by a bike yesterday, apparently.
Yeah.
We'll get into that in a little while.
Well, I guess that's his whole Lance Armstrong thing. I guess he thought he was doing the Tour de France or something.
What a dummy.
But the Reverend David Alston was a Swift boat crewmate of John Kerry's in Vietnam. He's in Columbia, South Carolina. He was a gunner on the boat that John Kerry was on. And he talked about John Kerry's military service.
I am a man of faith, and I did not come here tonight to glorify what we did. I came here to share my personal knowledge of a young naval officer who rose to the challenges and responsibilities of leadership and who has always shown the courage to speak truth to power. The 27th Psalm tells me, though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. I stand before you tonight alive, while many of our brothers never made it home. I am grateful to have lived to enjoy my children, to see them grow up. But I stand before you only because Almighty God saw our boat safely through those rivers of death and destruction by giving us a brave, wise, and decisive leader named John Kerry.
Now, you know what? There was not a pretentious word spoken by this guy.
Yeah, and it's like I said before that they used this guy used religious language because he's a reverend.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't misuse it like George Bush and codify it so it becomes this Republican agenda speak. You know, he really was honest and he spoke, you know, like you said, without pretension.
He spoke from the heart. And see, what I got from that, Mark, is that 5-10 years from now, people are going to be speaking this way about some of their comrades in Iraq who didn't come back from that conflict.
Right.
And why, you know, the whys and wherefores of that situation, which we are not really aware of now because we're in the moment.
And they will probably be Democrats.
Yeah, that would be my guess, that's for sure. Now, you know, Clinton also talked about Vietnam and about the war and about his lack of service and John Kerry's service to his country. Let's hear from the former president.
Now, let me tell you what I know about John Kerry. I've been seeing all the Republican ads about him. Let me tell you what I know about him. During the Vietnam War, many young men, including the current president, the vice president, and me, could have gone to Vietnam and didn't. John Kerry came from a privileged background. He could have avoided going too, but instead, he said, send me. When they sent those Swift boats up the river in Vietnam and they told them their job was to draw hostile fire, to wave the American flag and bait the enemy to come out and fight, John Kerry said, send me. And then, on my watch, when it was time to heal the wounds of war and normalize relations with Vietnam and to demand an accounting of the POWs and MIAs we lost there, John Kerry said, send me. Then, when we needed someone to push the cause of inner-city children struggling to avoid a life of crime, or to bring the benefits of high technology to ordinary Americans, or to clean the environment in a way that created new jobs, or to give small businesses a better chance to make it, John Kerry said, send me. So tonight, my friends, I ask you to join me for the next 100 days in telling John Kerry's story and promoting his ideas. Let every person in this hall and like-minded people all across our land say to him what he has always said to America. Send me.
That's interesting. Yeah, see, he's drawing...
Good pitch man. He's a good pitch man for the Democratic Party.
He's an excellent pitch man, but he's also drawing a very distinct contrast between John Kerry's service. This is something Reverend Alston did as well. John Kerry's service to his country not just putting on the uniform, not just, you know, getting a little pilot's license or whatever it was that Bush was doing down there in Texas.
And he did it by admitting his own shortcomings, too, like he did with the I'm a millionaire, but I'd be willing, you know what I mean, by making himself sort of not a sacrificial lamb, but sort of an example. Basically saying, this guy's a better guy than me in some respects.
In some respects, yeah. And a lot of what they were saying last night, all of them, Hillary Clinton, Al Gore, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, a lot of it was speaking to the perception that Bush is stronger on homeland security and terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
That is the one area that Bush seems to do better than Kerry. And what I think a lot of the focus last night was on trying to even that score up and to say to people, no, John Kerry has the background to lead this country during a time when another president has gotten us into an intractable situation overseas.
And I also think that some of what the Bush administration does and some of what creating an atmosphere of fear does is that, I just realized this just now as you were talking, is that he may not be better at terror, you know, within this country, but by constantly saying there's a threat, that means that every day that something bad doesn't happen, on some level, in the unconscious, you think that it's because of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're stupid. But I think the other thing is, it's a tricky thing that they do, but they've created an element of fear in this country, whether it's real or not, it is fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how that's translating into some people's minds as them being better on terror than what could be. But I think that once the fear is established, you develop a relationship with who's ever in charge, a sort of weird paternal sort of family kind of protector relationships that you just don't – people are afraid to make a change in the middle of this fear. And I think that's what they're playing on. But the truth of the matter is that to make a change and to, you know, engage the world in a dialogue about terrorism and try and get, you know, these alliances, you know, rebuilt and try and make it a collective international coalition would only make the world a safer place. But I think that what Bush has really done is tricked the population. Anyone who says that Bush is better on terror is really abiding by their fears.
Well, you're onto something there, Mark. What Bush is doing is pushing the idea that Kerry cannot do anything different on the world stage than what he, Bush, has done. That he can't really say, I'm going to pull out of Iraq. That he can't really do anything different than Tom Ridge has done with national security. That he can't have a better defense secretary than Donald Rumsfeld. That he can't have a better group of people advising him on world policy than the Wolfowitzes and the Pearls and the rest of these neoconservatives.
But I'll tell you one thing. Commissioner Thompson said that if something bad happens now, it's your fault, Bush. It's your fault. And we're going to talk about that when we come back, right?
Absolutely. Coming up, the presidential palm pilot, the liberal agenda, and Terror Watch here on Air America Radio.
Hey, check us out at morningsedition.com where you can blog, email, and waste lots of time at work looking at our links.
Do you ever wonder why you seem to pay more in taxes than rich people with smart accountants? Do you ask yourself, what's wrong with our tax system? Well, here's a reality check. Taxes on wages and salaries are much higher than taxes on income from investments. People who are so rich that they don't have to work pay the federal government only a sliver of their dividends and capital gains. By comparison, working people owe a much larger share of their hard-earned income in taxes. Someone who makes $50,000 from working pays more than three times the taxes of someone who makes $50,000 from investments. That is just not fair. At the Century Foundation, we have ideas for fixing the tax system so that working Americans get a fair deal. When we know the facts, we can find real solutions. Get informed. Visit the Century Foundation online at www.centuryfoundation.org. That's www.centuryfoundation.org.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Today is day two of the Democratic National Convention. So far, it's been a love fest for the Democrats, with several party luminaries taking the stage last night, but none so brighter than ex-president of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton, who brought the crowd to their feet several times as he criticized President Bush and his fellow Republicans. Clinton said they could not wait to see him get out of office. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry spent the day in Florida in preparation for his trek to Boston for the party party's impending coronation. Kerry told a campaign stop yesterday that he has not seen the United States as such a target of world animosity since the era of the Vietnam War. Published report says convention Democratic leaders are keeping a muzzle on popular legendary comic Whoopi Goldberg, fearing she is still radioactive because of her sharp criticism of Bush. And convention delegates tonight will hear from a rising star in the Democratic Party as U.S. Senate hopeful Barack Obama from the state of Illinois. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Hi there, the old pal Bill, sitting poolside and sucking down a cold one. Whoa, I just love summer. Now the Democratic Convention's coming up, so Serious Cracked Up Comedy's doing the Demo Cracked Up Convention. Get it? Demo Cracked Up? That's pretty damn funny. 3 days of the best political humor. That's right, Monday through Wednesday on Serious Cracked Up Comedy 146. Hey, I hope no one's making fun of me.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with another Carfenic Minute. We all know SPF's a must for sun worshippers everywhere, but there's someone else in your life who needs a new pair of shades. When I come back, I'll shed some light on the matter.
Oil is oil. Don't kid yourself. Technology makes better oils possible, like Royal Purple. Royal Purple reduces friction and increases film strength. Go to royalpurple.com and you'll find independent test results from North Carolina and Oklahoma State. Not hype, just facts. What's in it for you? Superior protection, fewer oil changes, more horsepower, torque, and better gas mileage. Find Royal Purple at Napa, O'Reilly's, your local high-performance center, and royalpurple.com today.
We avoid the sun's damaging rays by using sunblock to protect our skin. But how's your family car taking in the heat? Oven-like temperatures can crack vehicles' vinyl and leather, fade cloth, bake foam padding, and crack or discolor paint. But don't smear on SPF 45. Try these tips. Park in the shade and use sunshades or reflectors in windshields and rear windows. Also, try vent visors that allow you to crack windows, rain or shine, which reduces cabin temperature. My favorite beat-the-heat solution? A car cover made from Blockit fabric by Kimberly Clark. Cool. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us. Brought to you by Royal Purple Synthetic Oil, the performance oil that outperforms.
Past the hour, morning sedition. I'm Mark Maron. This is my buddy Mark Riley over here.
Hey,
we are in New York City. I don't care what's going on in Boston. We're in New York because this is where it happens for us.
That's right.
Is where the convention happens for us. We've got people. We've got our. We're gonna have a reporter on the street covering the convention here in New York later. We're gonna have the TV on so we don't miss breakfast at the convention. You know, we don't need to be there. You know, no. It's easier for us. You know, I'm not distracted by you know famous politicians speaking, you know, deeply and convincingly about the party's dreams.
Where was this at the hotel bar?
Yeah, let's do the Palm Pile because Ramon just sent it to me. Thanks, Ramon. He's listening now. Here's the president's schedule for today. 9 o'clock a.m. Wake up in Crawford in pain. Take painkillers for yesterday's bike wreck. Damn armadillos. 9:10 a.m. Take painkillers for last night's Democratic speeches. Damn Clintons. 9:30 a.m. Call Karl Rove. See if we can use this bike wreck to capture undecided clumsy voters in swing states. 11 p.m. Continue reading 9/11 report. It's like a mystery. This Bush character doesn't know anything. I wonder how it's going to turn out. 12 noon. Continue to lay low during Democratic convention. I am the best president at laying low ever. It's better than Reagan even.
Ooh.
1 p.m. Have dinner with Pops. Ask him if being a one-term president is all that bad. 3 p.m. Watch advanced copy of Manchurian Candidate. I'm surprised no one's ever thought to film this story before. 5 p.m. Watch Clinton's speech again. Damn, I wish I was Democrat. Then I could screw whoever I wanted. 9 p.m. Bedtime. Fall out of bed. Damn armadillos. 9:10 p.m. Listen to Singing Jackalope. Think happy thought. Headline, quote, Kerry injured an even stupider bike accident than Bush, unquote. There you go. So now it's time for, what are we doing? Terror Watch?
There we go. go.
Speaking of the president.
Pushing for 9/11 reforms. According, pushing. Not to the president, but to one of his aides.
Pushing? You mean peddling?
Peddling.
Dude, what is with this president? The audacity, the arrogance, the complete lack of respect for this commission is mind-blowing. These guys spent months and months and months accumulating information. All right, granted, you know, they didn't blame him enough, and they may not have, taken to task this administration enough, but he has the information that will enable him to mobilize the Congress into taking some action on some of the stuff they did uncover, right? And the commissioner, Commissioner James Thompson, really just bluntly said to Bush, quote, if something bad happens while these recommendations are sitting there, the American people will quickly fix political responsibility for failure, and that responsibility may last generations. He's basically saying that, you know, if you don't take action on some of these recommendations, now, if anything happens, you will be at fault. There is no way that you will not be at fault. Uh-huh. Right? There's no getting off the hook down. There's no blaming Clinton anymore. There's no nothing. This thing is sitting on Bush's night table, all right? And he has the nads to say, I found it interesting. That's what he said about the report. I found it interesting. Quote, it reads like a mystery novel. It's well written. This is a guy who doesn't read novels. So he's basically saying, I didn't even read it. And then he says, quote, I'm gleaning that was a well thought out plot by the enemy, unquote. That's what he said. Then he says, we've got work to do. Where is he? We've got work to do. He's pedaling. He's on his mountain bike, falling over like a dummy out in Texas. Congress is on vacation. Here, a quick recap. Where was he when this came over his desk? Bin Laden determined to strike in United States, August 6, 2001. He was clearing brush on the ranch. All right, so now he's got the commission report sitting on his coffee table. Where is he? He's biking out on the ranch. He thinks that what he's doing is making him look strong because the Democratic convention is going on. But I am here to speculate that this makes him look like a doofus, an irresponsible president, and an arrogant tard. That's what I'm going to say right now, because he should be taking action now. He should be, you know, pushing Congress to make these things happen instead of being arrogant and sitting on his ranch while this commission report is sitting on his desk.
That would be the morally right thing to do, Mark, but that's not what is at issue here. What's at issue is the political right thing to do. He's got 40 recommendations on his plate, all right?
Yeah.
Now, as he moves, and understand, he's being very clever here. It may look like he's a doofus, but he's not a political doofus.
No, I know that.
What he's doing is co-opting the 9/11 commission that he didn't want in the first place. He's embracing the report while damning it with faint praise, read like a novel, well written. That doesn't mean anything, okay? But at the same time, his aides are saying, well, he's reading through it, he's moving, doing teleconferencing with his senior aides to find out exactly which recommendations he will implement and which ones he'll do without having to go through the Congress. Because the Congress are the ones they're talking about. It's Hastert and Army and the rest of these guys. Well, it's in delay. Nothing's going to happen till the end of the year. Well, if Bush manages to push some of these things through, despite a Congress which is predominantly of his own party, then he thinks he's going to end up looking like the good guy here.
Yeah, but how much time does it have to take? I mean, if what they're saying is true, if we've got to be careful in this country, if Tom Ridge is going to get on TV and say it's bad, I don't know what's going to happen, but I heard chatter, it's going to be bad, we don't know where it's going to be, we're not going to raise a terror alert, but, you know, watch your arses. You know, I mean, if he's going to say that, and then this president has the arrogance to let the Congress go on vacation without considering this an urgent thing, mm-hmm. an urgent need to accommodate some of these recommendations in order to make this country safer, then I'm just wondering who's lying. Because if he's got the nads to put it on hold, that means he's confident something bad isn't going to happen.
He's taking the political risk that something bad isn't going to happen. What he'll do is roll this out. He'll roll out which recommendations he's going to adopt just before his national convention, not in the middle of the Democrats.
So all he cares about, what you're saying is, in the political sense, is all he cares about is maybe looking over this commission report to somehow figure out how he's going to sell his agenda for the next 4 years.
But it's not just that. Understand that what he's doing,
yeah,
in the middle of the Democratic convention, while he is on his ranch in Crawford, Texas,
on his mountain bike,
he is giving the he's trying to give the American people the impression that he's actually hard at work. That's what he's doing. He's saying, we're going over these recommendations. We're going to act on some of them before Congress. In other words, he's giving people, you know how it is when guys are try to give the impression that they're hard at, you know, that they're at their cubicle hard at work, punching stuff into the computer, when they're actually emailing their friends.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
All right, well, here, let me quote him then. Let me quote him. Hard at work.
Okay.
This is from the president. This was, I think, yesterday. Monday, yeah. Quote, at my age, you're more concerned about the cardiovascular benefits of a workout. Okay? He finds it mind-clearing, the mountain bike. He also said, this is the president, hard at work. He says, in referring to running, he said, well, my right knee has finally had it. And then we quote some more. Running is a really painful experience for me now. This is hard at work, the president.
Yeah.
Here we go. Quote, this is from the ranch where he's got the commission report. Quote, I was looking for a different way to get outside and get exercise. End quote. And here he says again, quote, swimming is outside exercise, but you don't get the feeling of the wind rushing past you, nor can you swim your favorite piece of property. End quote. That's the president hard at work. I guess you're right, Mark. I mean, he is given that sense that he's hard at work out there on the ranch.
Out there on the ranch. And understand, too, how is it, do you think, that reporters know, for example, that he rides 18 miles, it takes him an hour and 20 minutes, he burns 1,200 calories, and his heart rate reaches 168 beats a minute? How do you think they know that?
Because he tells them.
Exactly. Because his people tell them.
Because he's hard at work.
We
got to go. I want to talk a little more about this exercise addiction, because I know what it means, and I know where his head's at, and it is not in taking care of the country. We'll be back on Air America in a minute.
I'll take the Mayhem in the AM breakfast special. What do I get with that? No. The Mayhem in the AM. The great morning show, it's... What the... No, the one with Steak Shapiro, Mike Bell, and Nick Cellini. No, it's Guy Talk. Morning sports with an edge. Oh, my God, come on!
Mayhem in the AM. Sports talk anyone can understand. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on Sirius Sports Action 123.
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins.
Ambassador Joseph Wilson, you got a front row seat into what it's like to be a subject of media coverage. How did you rate the media coverage of your op-ed piece and the aftermath? What did they get right? What did they get wrong?
Well, I've been watching the media coverage really in the run-up to the debate on going to war. My own sense in the run-up to the war was that all of us let the side down. I think that we had an obligation, our Congress, our investigative journalists, those of us who attempted to speak out, really had an obligation to discuss fully this decision on whether or not we were going to send 130,000 people to invade, conquer, now occupy Iraq before we got these guys there. And I regret very much that there were so few of us who were willing to stand up and be counted in that particular debate.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Welcome to Tape 5, The Backpat. Let's say your child comes home from high school. They did something good. It's time to give them The Backpat. Now you try The Backpat. That's it. And pat, pat, pat.
It's really not that difficult. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4-KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
I started hearing voices telling me, you're dying, you're dying. I couldn't make them stop. My heart kept speeding up and slowing down. Now I feel paranoid all the time, and I can't tell what is real and what isn't. I'm on medication, but it doesn't help. Sometimes I believe I'm already dead and in hell.
Unfortunately, this 19-year-old learned that happiness and a heightened sense of touch aren't the only side effects of ecstasy. Leave ecstasy alone. To learn how or to read other real-life ecstasy tragedies, visit drugfreeamerica.org.
What was your name again, Barry?
Johnson.
Barry Johnson.
Yeah.
The U.S. Postal Service wants to remind everyone this year to protect themselves from becoming victims of identity theft. Your personal information is a gold mine for identity thieves. Identity theft is taking key pieces of someone's personal information, such as a name, address, or social security number, in order to impersonate them. For more information, log on to consumer.gov. A message from the U.S. Postal Service.
Hey, it's Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition. I'm with Mark Riley.
Yep.
We are on Air America Radio in New York City covering the convention from here, which is fine. It's fine with me if they want to leave us out, if we're the black sheep of the roster. If they
Wait a minute. You know what? Let me stop right there. Let me do something so that we all feel better about this. We're back with more coverage of the Democratic National Convention here on Morning Sedition. How about that?
That was perfect, man. That was perfect. Apparently, send me, according to a blogger who is quoting a blogger from Randy's blog, the repetition of send me is actually from a reference to a segment of Isaiah. Here I am, send me. And he said, go and say this to the people. Hear and hear, but do not understand. See and see, but do not perceive. But the, I guess send me is part of that. I wonder.
I thought it was Sam Cooke.
Yeah. Darling, you send me.
Yep.
So I was talking about exercise addiction and what it really means for a not-so-recovered alcoholic to be a chronic exercise addict to the point where George Bush, is clearly obsessed with his cardiovascular condition and the need to exercise every day. Now, I'm just speaking from personal experience as somebody who is also a recovering alcoholic and also somebody who has gone through chronic exercise periods. You know, when you are thinking in those terms and all you can think about is getting your exercise for the day and making sure you get that heart rate up, you are actually in some sort of, you know, active compulsive addiction. And the reason you look forward to that, it's the only time that you can actually feel like you're in the present and feel relieved. And I think, if I'm going to speculate here, that his chronic exercise addiction, his inability to think of anything else other than that, you know, in terms of being on the ranch, and is really a symptom of the fact that he has very little, you know, he has very little control over anything around him, and that the information that's going in is not, it has nothing to do with his thinking, with his vision, with, he is barely holding on.
What does it mean that he's sharing his heart rate with reporters? What does that mean?
I think that he's trying to put forth this idea that, you know, he's in good shape, he's strong, you know, he's got endurance, you know, he's a guy who's out in the world doing things, but he's out in the world exercising on his bike. There is no heroism. You know, it's not heroic to have a good exercise regimen. You know, I don't know when in this country, you know, men and people in general have become so compulsive about exercise. It's because if they didn't, their brains would pop off out of fear and existential panic. And I think that is exactly what you see in this president, that he's not representing somebody who is strong or somebody who has endurance or somebody who is healthy. He's representing somebody who is running on a daily basis from existential panic.
Now, wait a minute. Chris, can I have the phone? I'm canceling my gym membership. Okay, because you just made me feel like a complete fool for everybody.
No. I exercise too, but I know because of my compulsive nature, and I'm not president, and I would never want to be president.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm positive. Okay. Well, I was this morning when I woke up. I was like, I'm president.
There you go.
But that went away, and that's between me and me in the mirror.
All right.
But what I'm saying is that if I don't exercise, I start to beat myself up because it's the only thing. Yeah, I'm sort of like, God, I got to get out and exercise because I feel gross. I feel fat. And I think that this president does that sometimes. I think that he probably, if he doesn't exercise for a day, he goes, oh, no, I'm feeling a little fat. Do I look fat? I think that he is so self-involved, so self-centered, so narcissistic that really all he thinks about is himself and really how he's going to maintain power and whatever extensions of that narcissism, you know, will enable him. But I do believe that, you know, he's a guy who is full of fear, full of panic. You know, when he needs religion, he takes it. But he's completely, you know, operated. You know, he understands a Manchurian candidate because he is one.
You know, I think he's also trying to do a little aversion therapy here. The Dow is falling like a rock right now. It's at its the new low for 2004. At the same time that's going on, of course, Bush's people have been telling us, look at the Dow, don't look at jobs growth for economic recovery. And at the same time, there are 145,000 poor children who were dropped from a federal state health insurance plan in the second half of 2003. 145,000, that's the population of Bridgeport, Connecticut.
So are you telling me that the economy sucks, these kids are uninsured because of Bush policies?
Yes.
Bush policies have created a gap, a decline in the economy. And what was the other one?
Well, you know, by the way, half of the kids that were dropped in the state of Texas, Bush's home state.
Where he cares so deeply for people. He's busy. He's
busy
the
riding, yeah.
We'll be back in a minute on Air America Radio.
Intelligent people live everywhere. People like you and me, interested in art, film, politics, and culture. So why doesn't Hollywood think so? Hi, I'm Larry Meistrich, founder of Film Movement and producer of films such as Sling Blade and You Can Count on Me. More importantly, I'm a busy father of three who lives in the suburbs. Most quality independent and foreign films don't open in a theater near you, especially if you live outside of New York or Los Angeles. Should you be culturally punished for having a backyard? I created Film Movement for anyone who wants to see films other than the blockbusters playing at your local multiplex. Each month, subscribers to Film Movement receive a new film to own on DVD by signing up at AirAmericaRadio.com. It's like getting the best of Cannes and Sundance delivered to your door each month. Subscribe through AirAmericaRadio.com and receive one of my favorite films, O.T. Our Town, for free. O.T. Our Town is a documentary about the power of education in America. It is a film that deserves to be seen by everyone. Choose to see films that matter. Subscribe to Film Movement today at AirAmericaRadio.com and help support Air America.
Okay.
And
I'm Tony Hawk. And I've got a new show called
Tony Hawk's Demolition Radio.
Every Tuesday, 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific. You can hear
it. It's going to be on action.
Serious 28.
It's skateboarding, it's music, it's action, it's funny, it's not boring.
Tony Hawk's
Demolition Radio.
We're live every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday, 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific. Exclusively
on Sirius Faction 28. I'll be talking through your satellite radio.
Welcome to Classes on Tape.
Okay.
Repeat the following phrase. Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you.
Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you.
Hey, Dad. How's it going?
Son, you're so proud. And that's a great test.
It's really not that difficult. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4-KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
When it comes to food safety, experts stress that cold temperatures will keep harmful bacteria from growing or multiplying on food. Remember the two-hour rule. Refrigerate or freeze perishables as soon as possible. And don't let food sit out at room temperature for more than 2 hours. Refrigerating foods quickly is one way you can give bacteria the cold shoulder. Brought to you by the Partnership for Food Safety Education.
It was way too much for my body, and I started tripping really, really bad. I curled up in a ball in a corner, started ripping out my hair, then slit my wrist with a steak knife, fell into a coma, and had to get my stomach pumped. I'm now in therapy in a rehab group. At school, I'm not even called by my name anymore. People just refer to me as that junkie.
This 15-year-old didn't die using ecstasy, though she probably wished she had. Leave ecstasy alone. To learn how or to read other real-life ecstasy tragedies, visit drugfreeamerica.org.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning's Edition. This is Air America Radio. One of the bloggers says, I'm blog bitch this morning, has brought up that it might be a competition that, you know, that Bush is trying to glom on to the Lance Armstrong victory and show that he is...
I mentioned that!
Oh, I'm sorry.
That! And that is, by the way, at morningsedition.com if you would like to blog along with
the
show.
The Air America website's having some trouble, but our website isn't.
We're in good shape. That's because we're here in New York.
We're here in New York covering the convention, and fortunately, we're lucky enough to have... somebody who's getting started in journalism. Our intern Jesse is on the streets of New York covering the convention. Jesse, how are you?
I'm great.
Hey. So how is it down there? Is a lot of traffic? Is it busy? Can you feel the excitement in the street about last night's speeches? Or
I don't know, Mark. I mean, excitement's
boiling over.
Is there really?
Nobody down here. It's not even light yet.
No, I know, but I bet you can feel it, though. Do you see any people around? Maybe we can talk to some people about the reaction to speeches. Any politicians down there or anything?
I got a guy setting up a fruit stand.
Really? Oh, maybe we'll talk to him later. Let's let him get set up. Maybe we'll get him in the next hour. I'm sure
Mark.
Yeah.
What are we doing? This is stupid. I mean...
We're covering the convention, Jeff. Look, you know, you're an intern. What's with the attitude?
Yeah,
you know
really.
What I mean? You have an opportunity here to cover a national Democratic convention.
For Christ's sake. This is New York, Mark.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. It's national.
Can I come upstairs?
No.
All right, yeah. You come
no, up. Stay there.
Yeah, yes. Stay down there.
Talk to the pigeons if you have to, but talk to something.
Yeah, what's with the attitude of these? All right, we'll get back to Jesse in a minute. Find some news. So I don't understand the attitude of the kid comes in. He's like, I want to be in journalism, you know, and he's got this great opportunity to cover a national convention. And that's the kind of attitude he's got.
Well, you know how it is. The interns now, they kind of, they want stuff to be a little easier than it was back in the day. We don't send them out for coffee, it's modern times, 21st century internships, man.
We give them a big opportunity to find some news.
Yeah, that's true.
But also, I want to talk about that for a minute, that Bush competitive nature. That might be something to do with it. Because my dad's like a pathological narcissistic personality. It's compulsive exerciser. And it does have something to do with sort of like, constantly feeling like he's better than other people in terms of like, oh, yeah, you can do that. Well, I can do that, and I'm 60. How does that grab you?
I thought people were doing that to just like outrun the Grim Reaper. Which nobody ever does.
I think that if we're to assess Bush's narcissistic character... That he's doing it to prove himself that he's better than anybody else.
You sure it's not like every ache and pain is like the beginning of the end? Because that's how it is for me.
I believe that. I know that after a certain point in life, you have your 20s, and then in your mid 30s, you realize, wow, from here on out, it's decay management.
Yep.
No new growth is a good growth.
Yeah, but I think you're right, Bush. I don't know whether he's like trying to display something, he's trying to ignore something, if he's
all of the above,
or is he just trying to make news while the convention is going on?
How is that news? You mean by falling off his bike?
Yeah, maybe he did it on purpose.
He's going to make the same kind of news a 7-year-old can make.
Well, he's human. But they say that his supporters like this about him: the fact that he's a spaz on a bike.
It's unbelievable what his supporters will allow him, as far as, they forgive him so many faults.
Oh, Ann Coulter's probably thinking this is some kind of a work of genius.
He's a dummy in some respects. He's a great politician in the wrong way, but you watch the Democratic National Convention and you see a party filled with intelligent people who aren't afraid to be intelligent in front of their voters, who are not afraid to, embrace and encompass all different types of people. I mean, this is not ever a party that would alienate the NAACP or would alienate anybody under their ticket, alienate gay people, you know what I mean? This is a party that can unite people, and these Republicans have got nothing.
Are you getting ready to alienate Barbara Streisand?
They're petty and bitter. And, yeah, she's not there. I didn't see her there last night.
Here's
from the Streisand compound, the liberal agenda. One, lobby to carve both Clintons on the Mount Rushmore. Wait, carve all three Clintons on the Mount Clinton. There you go. Two, ask Clinton, Carter, Gore, and Edwards to give Kerry Southern lessons. Three, praise Gore for last night's dignified speech, but tell him the real money is in the Angry Al speech. Yeah, where is that? Oh, I don't know where it is. All right. Four, praise Carter's speech, but remind him that the phrase Habitat for Humanity is totally sexist. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, Dukakis Ferraro, 2008. Just think about it.
How dare they?
There you go. In the next hour of Morning's Edition, more on the Democratic National Convention, Mark Maron's Dream Diary, the fuss over Shove It, and the Liberal Confessional, when we come back here on Air America Radio.
The Consultant Pharmacist is your own personal health care consultant. You'll find them in nursing homes, other long-term care settings, and in your community, anywhere there's a need for high-level medication management. But Consultant Pharmacy is more than just managing medications. It's about helping people live better and longer lives. This message brought to you by the American Society of Consultant Pharmacists.
Son, I want you to listen very carefully. Now, if you're ever at a party and someone asks you if you'd like to shove a stick of dynamite up your rear end, don't do it. Dynamite is very, very dangerous.
Got it, Dad.
It'd be nice if teenagers thought that using the drug ecstasy was as dangerous as, say, sticking dynamite up their rear ends. And that it can cause panic attacks, severe depression, kidney failure, heart failure, seizures, even death. To learn more from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America, visit AskYourKidsAboutE.com.
Compromise off. Serious on. Uncompromised music and entertainment.
Uncompromised music and entertainment.
Serious. It's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. It's day two of the Democratic National Convention, and from all indications, the love fest continues. The party delegates got off to a rousing start last night as some of the veteran stars took to the stage to blast the incumbent president and members of the Republican Party. Democrats taking the stage at the Boston Convention Center last night one by one offered constructive criticism on why four more years of the same would not be in the nation's best interest. One of the luminaries, former Vice President Al Gore, who rhetorically asked loyal Democrats, loyal Republicans, all Americans, did you really get what you expected from the candidate you voted for? This in reference to President George W. Bush.
I sincerely ask those watching at home tonight who supported President Bush 4 years ago, did you really get what you expected from the candidate you voted for? Is our country more united today or more divided? Has the promise of compassionate conservatism been fulfilled, or do those words now ring hollow?
And Gore also took a jab, a verbal jab, at third-party candidate Ralph Nader.
I also ask tonight for the consideration and the help of those who supported a third-party candidate in 2000. I urge you to ask yourselves this question. Do you still believe that there was no difference between the candidates?
Former Vice President Al Gore, as he addressed delegates at the Democratic National Convention last night. Gore also received praise from the man he shared the White House with for 8 years in the last decade. Former President Bill Clinton made a point to the American people in his speech, saying the problems of the 2000 election in which Gore lost will not be repeated in 2004. Clinton wowed the audience after surgically dissecting the frailties of the Bush White House. The ex-president also alluded to the Republican-driven scandals during his tenure by saying they could not wait for him to leave because of his overwhelming popularity. Speaking of scandals, there's one brewing of sorts at the USA Today this morning after the paper decided to drop conservative author, lawyer, and frequent media critic, as well as political analyst Ann Coulter. This from the paper's coverage of the Democratic National Convention. Coulter got into hot water with the paper after writing cops and pretty girls were her allies at the convention. As for women at the convention, she said, quote, "My pretty girl allies stick out like a sore thumb amongst the corn-fed. No makeup, natural fiber, no bra needing, sandal-wearing hirsute, somewhat fragrant hippie chick pie wagons they call women at the Democratic National Convention. So much for objectivity." Iraq remains the scene of more and more violence. Yesterday was no different as a suicide bomber successfully claimed the lives of three Iraqis, including a child, and injuring three U.S. soldiers. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
He's been around for more than 400 million years. He'll go through 20,000 teeth in his lifetime. He can grow up to 45 feet long and weigh 30,000 pounds. And he can go 3 months without eating. But then he's going to be really, really hungry. No, it's not your brother-in-law. It's a shark. Silly. It's Shark Week on Sirius Discovery Channel Radio, 135.
Hi, I'm Bobby Lyons with today's Car Clinic Minute. Put on your thinking caps for a Car Clinic quiz. You're behind a car going 50 in a 60 miles per hour zone. If you follow for 1 mile before he turns, how much time did you lose? When I come back, the solution. In today's world of discord and disappointment, one thing's for sure. Car cover owners are so satisfied, they buy their car covers all over again. Think car covers are a hassle? No. Research shows owners find covers easy to put on and take off. Are all covers the same? No. The standard in car cover fabric is Blockit by Kimberly Clark. Don't let sun and dust damage your car. Kimberly Clark's Blockit fabric's got you covered. That's Blockit by Kimberly Clark.
Tailgating doesn't figure, and here's the math to prove it. If you're stuck behind the car cruising at 50 in a 60 zone for 1 mile, you've only lost 12 seconds. For 5 miles, the length of an average in-town freeway trip, it's only 1 minute. Now, balance the equation for speeding by adding the cost of tickets and subtracting life and property lost in accidents. This teacher says your need for speed doesn't add up. So the next time you fall behind someone going slower than the speed limit, don't divide your attention from safety by tailgating. Do the math and keep your distance. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment to rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning's Edition.
Good morning, it's Mark Maron with Mark Riley on Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio.
Oh, yeah.
It's so sad when unrecovered abuse victims like Ann Coulter, lash out, isn't it? I hope.
Oh yeah, it is USA Today.
Yeah,
that stringy-haired strumpet has been fired.
Now there's something wrong with her. She needs some serious counseling. I think that she needs to address whatever it is that punched a hole in her soul that makes her so angry and unconscionable. She's not even a critic. She's not even somebody that's enlightening anyway.
Okay, she was going to write a
slanderous idiot. Ann Coulter, my producer in my head, is saying that we've got to explain.
Who is she? Who is she?
That, he will make assumptions about our audience in terms of what they know and what they don't know, but somehow mentioning Ann Coulter is, like, baffling.
Well, she is baffling, but for a whole different set of reasons. She's been dropped. She was going to be doing a column from the Democratic Convention for USA Today. They dropped plans to do it because, according to her, they don't like my tone, humor, sarcasm, etc., which raises the intriguing question of why they hired me to write for them, and the equally intriguing question of why she took their money. Now, the piece that she said that she wrote...
I'll read you the opening of it.
Yeah.
Here at the Spawn of Satan convention in Boston, conservatives are deploying a series of covert signals to identify one another, much like gay men do. Well, that's sort of weird.
Yeah,
she's saying that the Democrats are Spawn of Satan and that the conservatives, I guess she's meaning her own people, are gay.
Yeah. Well, they kind of signal each other like the hanky in the right rear pocket and stuff, I guess.
Oh, I see. So they're making eyes at each other?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
My pretty girl allies stick out like a sore thumb among the corn-fed, no makeup, natural fiber, no bra needing, sandal wearing, hirsute, somewhat fragrant hippie chick pie wagons they call women at the Democratic National Convention.
Is that really? I didn't see any of that when I was watching the convention. So she's just manufacturing stereotypes that don't even exist there.
Hillary Clinton will whip her ass in a fight. I can tell you that now.
But she's using these tired old stereotypical representations of what? Where
because
does that
she's
come
got
from?
Nothing. Much as you say about George W. Bush,
I know
she's got nothing.
What she has is unrecovered abuse issues.
Yeah, you may be right about that.
That's what I think that she has. And you know, and
who did it? Her pops?
I don't know who did it.
I don't know.
We could only speculate, but either way, it's sad that, you know, she has these latent problems that she refuses to get treated or get into any sort of recovery situation or maybe see a therapist, and that we all have to pay for it.
Do you think that she walks past psychiatrists and they say, you know, I can help that?
No, I don't know. I'm not sure what she thinks she's doing, but she clearly, you know, has some really deep problems, and I feel bad for her. That,
you're sounding too compassionate for this woman, man.
Well, it's just sad that somebody, you know, who is coming from such a damaged place can only think to slander other people and try to hurt other people to try and make the pain in her soul feel better. It's a sad thing that she's such an unrecovered victim.
But how does such a damaged person get such a platform?
What, are you kidding me? That's the entire Republican Party. Look at all of them. Look at DeLay, Bush.
I know.
These are damaged, miserable people. Pastor Dick Cheney, damaged, miserable person that, you know, that has no compassion whatsoever because of some sort of, you know, early heartbreaking. I'm not sure what it was.
Early heartbreaking.
I'm talking out my arse. No. But, you know, all I got to say two things. First of all, you know what? Let's make it a partisan event. CNN, take Tucker Carlson off the air. Take him off the air. Don't put him at the Democratic National Convention. What do we need a buzzkill for? Is it really important that we have to cover all angles, that we have to, you know, have a fun time, and then you got to cut to Tucker Carlson and his little buttoning of things, his little conservative button? Him and Ann Coulter should be, you know, together. They should have a show. And you know what? Put Mo Rocca on that show, too, just to, you know, sort of, you know, ease it out. Mo Rocca is like, he's just like Tucker, only he's not conservative. He's just annoying.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, hey, let's talk about less annoying people. Let's talk about Bill Clinton.
I like Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton was received like a rock star last night.
He is a rock star.
But, you know, I think that his appearance last night kind of contrasted somewhat with what he did in 2000. I was there in 2000, Mark, when the big screen at the Staples Center showed him, like, in the bowels of the arena.
Yeah.
Like, you know, back where the janitors and, you know, the locker room attendants hang out.
Yeah.
And he's, like, walking through there. And, you know, there's this building crescendo of applause. Because, believe me, by that time, everybody was in their seats, right?
Yeah.
And it was this, like, crescendo of applause as he walked out and then walked onto the stage. And he talked for a long time, and a lot of people felt, even though he left the next day, that he had upstaged Al Gore. There was a whole bunch of media about that. This time,
I remember that.
Yeah. Well, this time he kept his speech a lot shorter than he did in 2000. It was only 30 minutes this time. It was done with a little bit less fanfare. But make no mistake.
Yeah.
When it comes to the Democrats, Bill Clinton is still the man.
Oh, yeah, okay. Absolutely.
And that's not to take away from John Kerry one iota.
And he did not hold back. You know what I mean? Mm. I thought that because of all this, you know, speculation that he was going to upstage Kerry, which is 3 days away, he's not going to upstage anyone. The thing about people with a certain authenticity or with a statesman's demeanor or even just performance chops is that they've got their own groove. It's not about upstaging or not upstaging. It's like, you know, you got your own energy. You capture the crowd, well, you're going to capture it. But if you know how to hold the crowd, you're going to hold them no matter what.
Yeah, well, that's true of most rap stars and true of Bill Clinton as well. He really did. He and Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, his wife, came out four square for John Kerry. And this is an important thing to note for Hillary Clinton, because there's been intense speculation that Hillary Clinton's chances for running for the presidency would be severely damaged should John Kerry win. So there's been a school of thought for a long time, Mark, that says Hillary doesn't really want to see him win because she wants to run herself in 08.
I don't understand. Why would that hurt her?
Because if John Kerry serves 8 years, she would not be the logical person to run in 2012, for example.
Right.
That it would probably be much more likely that John Edwards would be the favored person. Where if
she is
favored. They did take some stuff with the delegates. You know, they talked to delegates at the convention, and they said, well, in the unlikely event Kerry loses, who would you look at for 08? And Hillary was the hands-down winner.
Right.
So, you know, there is that question. But she, I think, has done a great job, and we have to give her credit for this. She has done a great job in putting down this speculation that she's not really with this ticket. She's come out four square for it. And most importantly, and people lose track of this when it comes to Hillary Clinton, she is an extraordinary fundraiser, probably the best in the party other than her husband. And she has gone out there and done the work in raising money for John Kerry. She's part of the reason why he set fundraising records for Democrats over the last couple months or so.
I think Hillary Clinton was, like, definitely on top of her game last night.
Oh, yeah.
Bam!
Yeah.
I mean, she got out there. I mean, I love her.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, her husband was equally on top of the game. As you pointed out last hour, they looked like they were very much into each other. They have a relationship that I think confounds the media, probably because most people in the media don't have relationships.
Yeah.
Let me not go there. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we've got some sound
of the former president.
Of Uncle Bill. We're gonna do it after the break, so stay with us on Air America Radio. Want to add your 2 cents? Give us a call at 866-303-2270 and give us your best shot.
There's a terrible affliction plaguing Americans. It's our number one emotional problem, the failure of relationships, dating, and marriage. At Theradate.com, we're a group of licensed and certified mental health professionals who have decided to do something about it. A revolutionary matching and compatibility system, originally available only for use by therapists, is now available to the general public. Theradate.com is not a casual dating site. It does not use personality profiles or other pop psychology gimmicks. It is a matching system utilizing over 80 years of psychological research. We ask questions the way therapists do to get to know their patients. We ask the questions that truly determine who is the best match for you. Theradate.com is now accepting free registration for a limited time. Log on to Theradate.com to try Theradate's unique matching system for free. If you're tired of being alone and truly want to bond with someone for life, log on to Theradate.com. That's Theradate.com. For a limited time, it's free to join our totally unique service.
I know. I'll take the Mayhem in the AM breakfast special. What do I get with that? No. The Mayhem in the AM. The great morning show, it's... What the... No, the one with Steak Shapiro, Mike Bell, and Nick Cellini. No, it's guy talk. Morning sports with an edge. Oh, my God, come on.
Mayhem in the AM. Sports talk anyone can understand. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on Sirius Sports Action 123.
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins.
The author of a new book called Where Have I Gone Right? The Right Mountain Guide to Getting the Job and Life You Want is Jim Hayhurst. You have to choose between often the reality of the rent that's due on the first of the month and your desire to just ignore that and go for the brass ring.
There is a reality that happens, and if you are, if you have to make the rent due at the end of the month, it is pretty darn difficult to change your careers dramatically. And those that have done it tend to have saved up some money and given themselves a little breathing space. There was some research done in New York that said that the average length of time out of work had gone from 13 weeks to 18 weeks over the last 4 years. So if you want to make a significant change, you certainly have to count on, 4 or 5 months to change jobs.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Research shows that the highest achieving students attend schools with good library media centers. It's easy to see why. School library media centers across the country have been helping teachers bring lessons to life. With computers, videos, books, and more for years. The Campaign for America's Libraries reminds you that school library media specialists help students develop the information searching skills they need to succeed throughout their lives.
All systems ready.
Cool. Lifelong learning begins at your library.
Yes, here we go.
All right.
We're slamming in Culturefest.
Culturefest.
Sorry, Larson. I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize to my producer in front of everybody here.
Why?
I was being mean to him because he told me to set up the Ann Coulter story. And I said, what do I got to set it up for? Everyone knows who she is. Everyone hates her. I can just say bad things about Ann Coulter, and people will enjoy that. He's like, well, maybe they want to know why.
Yeah. Well, USA Today didn't print her column. Good.
There you go. Okay. Are we friends now? 866-303-2270.
No.
866-303-2270. You know, I can be sort of a pain to work with sometimes. Can you imagine that, Riley?
No.
Let's do the dream diary. This is last night. I'm outside the Fleet Center with the protesters. Thousands upon thousands of the whitest, angry white people you've ever seen. A sea of sunburned necks and force-fed ideologies. This must be what the Abu Ghraib guards look like on their day off. They were braying and screeching and bellowing, and suddenly they all turned into donkeys and pigs and hyenas. Just then my waking conscious mind interrupted and said, turning them into animals is such a corny, hacky dream cliche. You cut out that crap right now. My subconscious got the message, and everyone went back to being pissed off Southerners. They all had signs. Quote, yeah, Kerry and Bin Laden, 2004. Kerry and Saddam, 2004. Kerry and Satan, 2004. I started screaming at them. A little shower of blue sparks shoots off of my tongue, and they start screaming back at me, and little showers of red sparks shoot off of their tongues. Things escalate, and suddenly we're surrounded by a cloud of angry purple sparks. Just then a cab pulls up. Out step Jesus, Buddha, Gandhi, and Martin Luther. Luther King. King pays for the cab, puts his wallet back in his pocket and says, you guys never pick up a check, ever. Buddha shrugs, says, Martin, that's because you're the new guy. Gandhi raises his arms and speaks to the crowd. My brothers, mental violence has no potency and injures only the person whose thoughts are violent. One guy yells, go home, foreigner! Terrorist! Jesus says, whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. Some woman yells out, shut up, hippie! Cut your hair, slacker! Buddha says, we must have compassion for all sentient beings. Somebody yells, draft dodger, pothead, liberal, freak! Half a brick comes zinging through the air. Buddha steps aside at the last second. King says, guys, we gotta go. Look around. We're not gonna win this one. And so through a crush of angry neocons, Jesus, Buddha, Gandhi, and Martin Luther King took off running for the bus. Luckily, King had tokens. I woke up and my bed was filled with spent firecrackers.
Oh, Lord.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness. Now, listen.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton, yeah. Last night.
Yeah.
The self-deprecating statements that he made.
Yeah.
Significant coming from this former president. Talking about the fact that he didn't go overseas to Vietnam, but John Kerry did. Saying, and this I think is interesting because, you know, Bill Clinton has always projected himself as being a man of the people. Well, now he's a man of the people who's also a millionaire.
Yeah, I love the way he did that. He really sort of like, you know, he did this humility thing, you know. He really,
yeah.
It was really, I thought it was kind of nadsy.
Yeah, let's listen to how he talks about how the tax cut that he got hurt the little guys of America.
Look at the choices they made. They chose to protect my tax cut at all costs while withholding promised funding for the Leave No Child Behind Act, leaving 2.1 million children behind. While they chose to protect my tax cut while cutting 140,000 unemployed workers out of their job training programs, 100,000 working families out of their child care assistance, and worst of all, while cutting 300,000 poor children out of their after-school programs when we know it keeps them off the streets, out of trouble, in school, learning, going to college, and having a good life.
That was great, man.
Powerful stuff, man.
And then we can talk about that other thing you said about China and Japan later.
Yeah, we are. We're gonna play that, and we're gonna have former Labor Secretary Robert Reich react to that.
Yeah, because Clinton brought up in his speech about how our government is borrowing money from Japan and China,
among others,
and how would we negotiate trade treaties with these countries if they're our lenders?
Yeah,
and I don't know much about that. And clearly that to me sounds something. You ever watch C-SPAN when they're doing like tariff trade commission stuff and you realize like, wow, this is what's really going on. And the rest of it is this strange charade that happens in front of this.
Well, you know what it is? This is what the guys with the degrees in economics deal with while the rest of us are trying to pay our mortgages.
Right. But this is like definitely how the world works.
There's no doubt.
So maybe he can, hopefully, I'm sure Robert Reich will be able to tell us.
Sort of. He's the labor secretary. He knows about, you know, he knows about all of those trade deficits. He knows about where the money that is bolstering this economy is coming from. And, that's right. We did talk about the stock market already because that.
Oh, let's take some calls, too.
Oh, yeah. We got some phone calls. Let's do that.
I'm spacing out here. I'm like, what were we going to do here? Weren't we going to do something? Oh, yeah. We were going to talk to Bruce in Virginia on Sirius. What's up?
Hey, Bruce.
Hey, man. You guys are great.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, listen, I'm a retired firefighter. I'm on my way to Norfolk right now. We're going to have a carrier rally. We're going to get a couple hundred guys. We're not all rednecks, Mark.
Oh, good. No, I know.
I know. My father-in-law lives in Chesapeake. That's not all that far from Norfolk, actually.
Oh, it's going to be a hoot. We're going to have all those yellow shirts out there, man. We could take Virginia.
I think you can, too. It's great. You know, the firefighters are on board with Kerry here in New York as well.
We were first.
Yeah, okay.
We were the first guys.
Well, good luck with the rally.
We're going to have a great time.
Thanks for calling.
Keep it up.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce.
Okay, all right,
thanks a lot. I don't think I ever judged the Southerners too harshly. I mean, I think there's some other people on this network that might, but I certainly...
Who could you be talking about, Mark Maron?
I've always been very excited. I do have to be honest with you. I do judge... It always surprises me when people call up and go, y'all are great. I'm like, wow, I never thought I'd hear that we were great. Because, you know, it's not that I draw lines, but for some reason you assume incorrectly that not Southerners are rednecks, but that a lot of times they're conservative, which is wrong because there's a pretty big Democratic tradition in the South.
Well, there's a big Democratic tradition in the South, Mark. You have to realize that the South went Republican at the time that the Democrats went for civil rights. It was Strom Thurmond who split from the Democratic Party in the late 1940s when Harry Truman began integrating the armed forces and other areas of American life. Strom Thurmond formed the Dixiecrat Party, which was Southern Democrats who were vehemently opposed to integration.
How could that be Democratic? I can't even imagine what it was like or what they were thinking at that point in time.
Well, see, here's the thing. Franklin Roosevelt wanted to do the right thing. His wife, Eleanor, wanted to do the right thing. But Franklin Roosevelt knew that if he broke ranks with the South, he would have lost the presidency. Because the South represented a very strong Democratic base of support. What happened after Thurmond through the 1960s as Lyndon Johnson put the Democratic Party four square on the side of civil rights was that little by little Southerners began voting Republican. Richard Nixon exploited this with his Southern strategy in 1968, and now we go to 2004 and the 11 former states of the Confederacy vote almost solidly Republican.
That's crazy.
Well, that's just a pencil history.
Not the firefighters in Virginia. 866-303-2270 is our number. We're going to talk to Stephen in Long Island. How are you, buddy?
Good. How are you guys?
How you doing?
Pretty good.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Mike.
I just want to make a point. You said Tucker Carlson was on CNN bashing the Democrats. I tried to find a station that would just be neutral.
Yeah.
13 on the McNeil Lair had David Brooks, who was knocking Jimmy Carter, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, on his speech, that he didn't mention extreme Islamic thought. Then I turned to Fox and, of course, saw Hannity and Coulter tearing it up. And I'm saying to myself, why can't they just forget about partisan, just let the convention go?
Yeah, just...
But the Republicans have spun the media the media is so afraid to be, you know, labeled liberal when, in fact, they may lean slightly left, but Fox is so far off the scale that they're not, you know, they're not balancing anything, and the Republican attack machine is really out of control, and the media is not standing up to them except you guys. It's one against everybody, and it's not working out well.
Now, Steve, if you want to see the raw footage of those speeches without the pundits, C-SPAN has it, and we have a link on our site, morningsedition.com, directly to the C-SPAN video.
But he's right. Thanks for your call, Stephen. Yeah, I just think that they should just get Tucker Carlson out there. Get Novak out of there. Like, you know, bring him back during the Republican thing.
Yeah.
David Brooks, who considers himself a Democrat now, isn't that true?
Are you thinking of David Brock?
Brock, oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
David Brock.
Yeah, no, David Brooks, I think, is still an unreconstructed conservative.
Unreconstructed.
Absolutely.
But I don't understand why they have him on. And Fox is the worst. It's the worst. I just watched that documentary, Out Fox, last night. And it's not bad. I mean, people were telling me it's bad. It's not a good movie. It's not a good movie. What it is, it's almost like a video magazine that explores, you know, Fox's bias. And it's worth seeing. I want to give it to my dad because my dad's not a Republican. He's not even conservative. conservative, but he's. I said, what news do you watch? You watch? He goes, I watch Fox. It's good. I'm like, what do you mean it's good? Well, it seems to be the good news. I'm like, you know, but my dad feeds on contempt. And that's what Fox gives you. If you emotionally feed on hatred and anger and bias, then that's what will appeal to you.
Mm. It's a shame. It is a real shame. Still to come, Time Magazine national political correspondent Karen Tumulty talks about Theresa Hines Carey, Elizabeth Edwards, Shove It, and much more here on Air America Radio.
This year, you are going to quit smoking. Whether you've said it for years or you're trying for the very first time, there's a revolutionary new system that's guaranteed to help you succeed or your money back. SmokeRx has a 95% success rate, so we guarantee that you'll be completely smoke-free and cravings-free in as little as 1 week. Unlike gums or patches, SmokeRx is a complete system that includes natural herbs to curb your cravings safely without nicotine. Best of all, SmokeRx starts to work immediately. Come on. Aren't you willing to give yourself 1 week to quit? We're so confident that SmokeRx will work for you that we're giving away a free month's supply with all of today's orders. Whether you're doing it for yourself or for the ones you love, SmokeRx is the fast, guaranteed answer. In as little as 1 week, you'll kick the habit for good or your money back. Call now to receive a free month's supply with your order.
To order risk-free, call 1-800-305-2704. That's 1-800-305-2704. Call 1-800-305-2704 now.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The Democrats are gearing up for day two of the National Convention at Boston's Fleet Center. Former Presidents Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton were among those wowing the delegates last night. Tonight, the party hears from veteran Democrat Edward Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and Howard Dean. President Bush continues his Crawford, Texas vacation, passing the time by reading the controversial 9/11 Commission report and riding his mountain bike. Bush says the 9/11 report reads like a mystery novel. He says it was well written. As for his bike riding, Bush yesterday took another spill while negotiating in the dangerous stretch of roadway. Nation's first trial to challenge punch card balloting since the Florida debacle 4 years ago is taking place today. This with a lawyer arguing that even isolated malfunctions in Ohio could change the November election results in this swing state. And the French court nullified the country's first homosexual marriage today. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
The Connection from NPR. Where do you go for your daily shot of intellectual caffeine? Think of The Connection as a supersized Bendy with a whole lot of frothy ideas, angles, and attitude. It will get you going, thinking, dreaming, and make it very hard to slow down. I'm Dick Gordon. Join us on The Connection from NPR.
The Connection, weekdays, live at 10 a.m. Eastern on NPR Talk 107.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. The heat's got you saying, oh, grr. So you press the blue button on your dash for some fresh air. Phew! Smells worse than a talking donkey. When I come back, I'll air out this moldy tale. We've all seen the tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your tornado unit today. Or visit tornadoair.com. If your AC hasn't been on for a while, chances are your vents are as green as Shrek's skin and are probably growing things that look like him, too. Pollen, dust, mold, and smog easily enter passenger cabins through the HVAC system. This causes musty odors that would make even Fiona sneeze and produces air inside your vehicle that could be 6 times dirtier than air outside. Protect yourself from Farquaad's evil pollutant spores by replacing your vehicle's cabin air filter. A fresh filter cleans the incoming air and removes allergens. Now that's a breath of fresh air. And yes, donkey, a happy ending. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
NPR, covering the convention from New York City, because that's where we belong, man.
That's right.
You know what? Everyone can go ahead and go up to Boston, but not me and Riley.
That's right. You all Maren, can go up there and watch those Sox games if you want.
Sox. Wicked pisser. Oh, my God. Yeah, we're staying here, man. Riley and Maren, staying here.
That's
staying
right.
in New York because, you know, we have the morning under control.
That's right.
On the phone, we have someone's going to talk to us about the Teresa Hines Carey gaffe. It's not even
was
a gaffe.
I don't call that a gaffe.
I think she was right. This woman is the national political correspondent for Time Magazine. Karen Tumulty is with us. How are you? Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm thrilled that Teresa Hines Carey gave it to that guy. Aren't you?
Yeah, and you know, I think it's as much as anything, it's a measure of the fact that the whole rest of this convention is scripted right down to the last millimeter that we know that her telling a reporter to shove it, which, by the way, she may have been the, you know, first politician we've heard say that, but I can promise you she's not the first one to have thought it.
Yeah. So is she officially
making such big news?
Is she officially a politician?
I think so. I think when you've been married to two senators, that gives you an honorary status in the club.
But apparently this guy, this, what's his name, Colin, Colin McNichol, the reporter that she told off, is kind of an idiot himself, isn't he?
Well, he works for a publication from her hometown of Pittsburgh. Richard Mellon-Scaife publishes it, and it's a very conservative, you know, aggressive kind of publication, so it is not her first encounter with them.
Who's Mellon-Scaife? Who is that guy?
Richard Mellon-Scaife. He's a very wealthy man who funded a lot of kind of the anti-Clinton activities in the 90s.
Oh, so these people are wrong. I'm sorry. I'm baiting you a little bit. So will an incident like this endear her to voters, or what do you think? Turn them off.
Well, it is absolutely sort of a reflection of where the country is right now,
yeah.
So deeply divided that I think, you know, a lot of people who were otherwise going to cheer her husband on they'll be glad to hear her say this, because, and let's face it, she didn't exactly do a full Cheney with this guy.
No.
And, you know, of course, people who are already in the other trench are just going to say, you know, this is mm-hmm. one more example of these people being unfit for office. You know, the irony here is, you know,
yeah.
this had come back right after she'd given a speech to her home delegation, the Pennsylvania delegation, calling for more civility in politics. So it's gotten to the point where sort of everything in politics is something that, you know, has one side cheering and the other side booing.
Mm-hmm. But being baited by, you know, an obviously, you know, right-wing journalist who was, you know, pestering her for specific information to get a reaction out of her is not the same as, like, you know, say, addressing, you know, a bunch of voters.
Right. And anybody who has watched these presidential campaigns, I mean, the intrusiveness of just the whole procedure of, you know, waking up in the morning and, you know, getting a microphone shoved in your face and
right.
having that continue every single day, day in and day out until you go to sleep, it's got to be a test of patience.
Mm-hmm. Karen Tumulty, it appears as though Teresa Hines Carey is not going to apologize. Her husband hasn't asked her to apologize. Her husband essentially seems to have backed her on this. Does that portend the possibility of his getting hurt politically simply because he is backing her? And what to me is a non-story, but obviously the network powers that be seem to have made this bigger than Dick Cheney.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I don't think it's going to cost him any votes.
Yeah. So do you think that Teresa has helped Carey's campaign, or do you think she's what do you think the public perception is on that?
Well, I think she has, actually, in part because if there's anything that John Kerry desperately needs is, you know, some sort of dose of spontaneity and, you know, spark in the campaign. At the beginning, I think Teresa Hines Carey made the campaign very, very nervous. Mm-hmm. And she would do things like, you know, she will wade back to the back of the plane and start telling the press what she thinks the campaign is doing wrong.
Oh, God. That's
so needless
good.
To say, we all perk up when we see her coming.
Wow. Karen Tumulty, you have interviewed both Teresa Hines Carey and Elizabeth Edwards for Time magazine. Teresa Hines Carey is speaking tonight. Elizabeth Edwards is speaking tomorrow. When I saw them on 60 Minutes, I got a sense that they were really just kind of getting to know each other. Are they past that stage now? Are they comfortable with each other?
Well, I interviewed the two of them together last Friday. It was, in fact, probably the last moment where they actually were physically together before the convention. And they talked a lot about the things that they have shared in their lives. Both, you know, they come from very, very different backgrounds, but both of them have seen an enormous loss, an enormous tragedy in their lives. Mrs. Carey losing her first husband in a plane crash, Mrs. Edwards losing her 16-year-old son in a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked a little bit about the kind of bond that gives you with anybody who has ever been through something like that. How, I think it was Mrs. Edwards said, you know, a survivor can always recognize another survivor. And, you know, the way they were able to just, you know, fall into this conversation, I was really surprised by, because very often I find political wives are even harder to interview than their husbands. I mean, mm-hmm. Tipper Gore, as much as she had a reputation for being, you know, the fun half of the Gore family, in an interview she was always very, very guarded.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Karen Tumulty, the national political correspondent for Time magazine. We stay with us for a minute. When we come back from a
sure.
break, we'll talk about their speeches tonight. Great. So we'll be right back with her on Air America Radio. Oh, I'm sorry. I was blogging. Hey, check us out on morningsedition.com where you can blog too.
It all kicks off on Monday. Your reason for living. It keeps Bud, Coors, and Miller in business. It's the reason Cheetos, Doritos, and Tostitos were invented. Without it, you'd be helping your wife around the house on Sunday afternoon. We've been telling you it's coming, and it's the biggest thing ever. And it's about to go live. This Monday, join us for NFL Radio, exclusively on Sirius 124.
This is your Icicle Insight on current events. Here's Peter B. Collins.
David DeBato, re-upped for military service, was rejected, rejected again, and then found a slot in Army Counterintelligence, where he has been serving as a special agent. Are you able to distinguish that there are many of us who have strong support for you and who feel that in many respects you were put in harm's way on a misguided mission?
First of all, I think that the men and women that are serving over there absolutely know why they're there. From what I have seen, they do not feel that they've been lied to. That's just the overwhelming sentiment over there. And again, that's coming from someone that's been over there and has just come back from over there. I also think that, you know, they're a pretty wise group of folks. They do realize, and they can separate out, that the people that may disagree with the administration's policy, the reason why they were sent over to Iraq, can appreciate that they may be against the policy, but yet support the troops.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
Stuart, how are those hedges coming, little man?
Dad!
Sorry, you're not little. You're 5. And you're holding a 10-horsepower gas hedge trimmer. I should watch myself, huh? So, fire her up and show those hedges who they're messing with.
But I could get hurt.
Don't focus on the negative. Come on, go get him, killer! Ah, that's the battle cry of a lawn warrior. Now, steady the blade! Where are those hedges?
Dad!
Think of the trimmer as an extension of your arm. Come on, keep that arm away from
the cat.
The cat. Oh, and the neighbor's new car.
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Boy, make it stop.
Come back here. You can do the neighbor's shrubs after you finish ours.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. Basketball great Charles Barkley.
Got a little pop quiz for you. What do I have a hard time keeping shut? And what is my nickname? And now I got one for you. Do you know your kids
principal's nickname?
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Back. It's 43 past the hour. We're talking to Karen Tumulty on the phone, national political correspondent for Time Magazine, about Teresa Hines Carey. Now, do you know about her speech, what she's planning on addressing?
You know, I don't. You know, she says that she's going to be speaking from the heart. She's also unaccustomed for her going to be speaking from a text, which I think is part of the effort to, you know, keep everybody on schedule.
Now, let me ask you this. Was her speech, do you think, vetted like everybody else's supposedly was?
I would say yes.
Really? You hear anything about whether anybody had any problems? Did they have to edit? Did they have to change anything?
You know, when she is on the stump, she does not usually say anything that is, you know, massively outrageous. She, in fact, tells a pretty affecting story of her own sort of immigrant journey from Africa and her own life as the daughter of a doctor who practiced medicine in the bush.
In Mozambique, I thought it was pretty interesting.
And then
she
went to college with Kofi Annan, apparently.
That's right. She was studying to be a linguist when she met her first husband.
Mm-hmm. So how did they compare to Laura Bush and Lynn Cheney, these two ladies, Edwards and Carey?
Well, you know, it's funny because I asked them which first ladies they admire.
Yeah.
And Teresa Hines went back through practically everyone's going back to Abigail Adams.
Wow.
But, you know, they are not of the traditional mold. And however, both of them made the point, which I thought was a good one, that what a first lady is really a function. What it needs to be is a function of what her husband needs in a first lady. And Teresa Hines actually said of Laura Bush, you know, in her way, she's a very strong woman. She has a great sense of humor. And then she said what I thought was interesting. She said, and I was really glad that she was the one who was there for him on 9/11.
Hmm, interesting. Final quick question. Do you think there is any possibility Teresa Hines Carey will stray off message and mention the shove it remark?
You know, I think it would. I think it could actually be a good moment of humor if she does it.
A good joke.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Karen Tumulty, for being with us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
She's the national political correspondent for Time Magazine. So, what do you say we do Birth of a Nation now?
Let's do it.
Since the handover of power, we're exploring various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. This is Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Day 29. Leaders of Iraq. Yes, good morning. Yes, good morning to you, too. Oh, I didn't mean to forget you and you. I hear you're going to send 150,000 school teachers door-to-door to conduct a national census in one day. Now, when 5,000 of those school teachers manage to get back to headquarters with their data, it's important that you guard the results very, very carefully. Yes, exactly. A little of that. What we've learned about the census here in America is that if certain groups of people don't exist, you don't have to give them money. That way, you don't have a bunch of annoying minorities and special interests wanting a refund on their taxes or more representation or, God forbid, civil rights. Now, here's an important lesson. Always control the numbers, because numbers can justify almost anything. And false numbers are just as good as true ones, because no one ever checks the real numbers. And if someone does, you just fire them. Or that. It's your country. I mean, you people invented numbers, so you got to know how important they are. So take your census and come up with whatever figures work out best for you, because numbers are there for you, not for them. God bless. Good luck. This is day 29 in Iraq, Birth of a Nation. Live free or die. There you go.
So we got some interesting people speaking tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Teresa Hines Carey.
Yeah.
Barack Obama in his prime time.
Is that tonight?
Yeah.
It's a big shot, man. This is like his first, it'd be comparable to a comic doing his first Letterman.
Yeah. And I mean, he's really considered a rising star in the Democratic Party.
He is. I like him.
Yeah.
My dad likes him. My dad goes, that Obama guy, he seems like a pretty good guy. We got to get my dad on the phone sometimes. Because now, like, he's listened to the show twice.
Okay.
Streaming twice, right? So now he goes, maybe you ought to have that Obama fella on. I'm like, look, we had him on months ago. All right? We talked to the guy already. All right? We don't need you producing the show, old man. Just because you've listened to two of them doesn't mean you know what's going on. What is he goes, why don't you have that Seymour Hersh fella on? That seemed like a good idea. Don't think we didn't think about it, buddy. You can't get him on. He ain't that easy to get on. My dad's hilarious. He's hilarious. How miserable he is.
My son calls me old man too. So.
Does he?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, old man. How you doing? Who are you talking to?
I call my dad Pop.
Yeah.
Usually, yeah. Sometimes I say, I don't like to say Dad because it makes me all mushy. You know,
really?
When I go, hey, Dad, but Pop, you know, there's a little distance there. You know what I mean? You got to keep your dad at a distance. What's up, Pops? You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're not winning. Look, you're getting older, and I'm still strong.
Oh, Lord, look at
who's
this.
Who's winning now? That's right.
Now, he's an aficionado of the Fox News Channel?
Well, he watches it. You know, there's an issue in my family in that my stepbrother, I guess would be, is sort of a diehard Republican. My dad's wife, Rosie's son, is like, you know, just he was in the military and he's a real Republican, and a lot of people in her family are Republican. So he's surrounded by it a little bit, I think. And, you know, he watches the Fox News and he gets all worked up because my dad's an angry guy. And if you're an angry guy, you know, Fox News will appeal to you. It's not about truth or not. I really believe that a lot of people that watch Fox News and choose to believe it know that a lot of it is BS. I think it's the same way that people watch wrestling. I really think.
Wait a minute!
I think it's the same way. This whole administration, on some level, you've got to know that they're lying and that it's all a big scam and they're doing whatever they have to do to win. But I think that people don't care. That's fine with them. It makes them excited.
But once you realize they're lying, it makes great theater. Same with wrestling.
Yeah, but some people they don't want to believe that they're lying. I think there's plenty of people out there watching wrestling that just refuse to believe that they're lying.
Well, that's true.
And you know what those people are?
Nuts.
Stupid. Stupid. It's stupid day in America.
Oh, here we go. Now here you're going to get the coalition of the stupid right in you.
You're probably right. Hey, I think it's really wrong that you make fun of the stupid
yeah,
because
right.
They're fighting. They're fighting the stupid battle to fight stupidity.
We've got rights too.
Yeah. I did use the word earlier, you know, the word. I'm not even going to bring it up. We'll be back in a minute on Air America Radio.
According to conservative economist Paul Craig Roberts, U.S. job creation in June was focused around employment in the service sector, an area not heavy with competition from workers overseas. Yet Roberts also notes that real wages in America have not kept up with inflation over the past year, and take-home pay as a share of the national economy is at its lowest level since the federal government began tracking it in 1929. This has been a Wind Dow Bob. I'm Jesse Russell.
This Dow Bob report brought to you by the Communications Workers of America, the union for the information age.
Stop whining. That's what head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donahue, told workers who just lost their high-tech jobs to overseas outsourcing. Analysts say millions of more jobs could be lost in the next few years. That's why we, the Communications Workers of America, are doing something about it. We're fighting to end tax breaks that ship our jobs overseas. We're helping tech workers organize. Learn more at techsunite.org, because America's future is on the line. A message from the Communications Workers of America.
He's been around for more than 400 million years. He'll go through 20,000 teeth in his lifetime. He can grow up to 45 feet long and weigh 30,000 pounds. And he can go 3 months without eating. But then he's going to be really, really hungry. No, it's not your brother-in-law. It's a shark, silly. It's Shark Week on Sirius Discovery Channel Radio, 135.
Growing up on a farm out here, I just thought life was great. I had my own horse. I drove a tractor with my dad. For me, I thought farm life was the American dream. Hi, my name is Rex Phipps. That all changed when I was reminded how dangerous working on a farm can be. My cousin was almost killed in a terrible accident. I had to do something. I couldn't help my cousin, but I could help other people avoid this on their farms. So I volunteered at farm safety day camps for children of all ages, teaching kids about being safe around tractors, tools, and animals. Just like I found the need to fill in my community, your community needs you. Find out how you can help in your hometown. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Mark Maron here on Morning Edition with Mark Riley.
Hey!
You know, Mark, sometimes it's not easy being a liberal, you know. We all stray from the straight and narrow progressive path from time to time.
Amen.
So when I need to unburden myself, I step into the Morning Sedition Confessional. Bless me, Brother Riley, I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Brother Riley, I know the women's movement has made great strides in this country, and I believe in all of it. Equal pay for equal work, the right to choose. I think it's time we had a woman president, but sometimes I look at women and I...
Yes, my son, you can tell me. I've heard it all.
Well, I turn women into sexual objects, and I desire them. It's especially bad in the summer, Brother Riley. I mean, all those tank tops and the little summer dresses, and I mean, some of them walk around in just lingerie almost. It's crazy, man.
Yes, my son. Do you mind if I turn on the fan?
No, it's good. It's okay. And everybody works out now, man. Everywhere you turn is like hard body, hard body, hot body. Women are way, way hotter than they used to be.
You have a good eye, my son. Go on, please. And don't rush anything.
Okay, well, instead of remembering that women are unique human beings with brains and souls, I just turn into this raging horn dog, you know, and I hate myself because I know it's wrong, but I can't help it, Brother Riley. I mean, what should I do? I'm just a man, for God's sake.
Be of good cheer, my son. Your predicament is as old as time itself. Women are supposed to be sexually attractive for the heterosexual male. It's why we are here and the dinosaurs are not. Ultimately, it is not our desire, but our actions that count. As long as you remember to treat women with the same respect you would wish to be treated, your primal lust shall not be victorious.
All right, so you're saying think with the big head, not the little head?
Always.
Right.
As a penance, set aside an hour each day for 7 days to read Our Bodies, Ourselves.
Oh.
If these feelings persist, wear a pair of 4-inch Manolo Blahniks for an hour or so to get a sense of what women must endure in our society.
Oh. All right, well, thank you, Brother Riley.
Go and sin no more.
Amen. Hey, we got our intern Jesse on the street covering the convention here in New York City. Jesse, how are you?
Unbelievable, Mark. I'm great.
What's going on out there? Is it really picking up? I mean, it must be. You must feel the energy in the air now. Is traffic backed up because of the convention?
Fine, I'll play. Yes, Mark. The mood is tense down here. As people from New York City could care less about what's going on in Boston.
I don't understand the attitude. I'm trying to give you an opportunity here. You're a reporter. How about give me someone to talk to? Just give me someone to talk to so I can have a guest.
But there's no... Okay, fine. Hold on a second. Excuse me, sir?
There we go.
Now we got something going on.
Yeah. Who am I talking to?
This is Mark Maron at Morning Sedition.
Is this Mark?
Yes.
What are you doing?
What do you mean, sir?
Why are you playing these games? Talk about the issues.
I don't understand.
Let's not even fall lies here. Do you understand? You're playing these games. You need to stop playing these games.
Do not
put me on the air. I will not go on the air. Do not put me. And you need to tell Sita and Garofalo they need to stop playing heterosexual games.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Jesse. I am
nice work.
These games.
We're talking about the issues. That's the issue guy.
He's wow. Real.
Thanks, Jesse. That was good.
Yes.
Yeah, that was great, man. That was great reporting. I appreciate you. You're really doing good, man. Maybe we'll do it again next hour.
Whoa.
See ya.
But all he can do, of all the people he can find on the streets of New York, who does he find but the issue guy?
Why don't we talk about the issues? We're fighting for our lives here. It's so wild to really talk to him.
Well, yeah, and you know, in a way, he's right. You know, I mean, we are fighting for our lives.
Absolutely,
here,
but we're laughing a little bit along the way, and that annoys some people.
Yeah.
How could you laugh? It's so important.
Well, we're fighting for our way of life here.
That's right.
You know, we really are. In all seriousness, ladies and gentlemen, all funnies aside, this election is going to determine how we live our lives. More than any other, certainly in my lifetime.
Yeah, I like the way, you know, on the convention last night, Gore and all these guys, the one thing you got out of all of them is the respect for Kerry and their complete commitment and knowledge that, you know, the president changes everything.
Yes.
Even if they don't, the policies, it changes everything.
It definitely changes everything. And this is what the Republicans are trying to hit Kerry with. They're trying to make it sound as if he can't change the policy on Iraq. He can't change the economy. He can't change many of these fundamental things that Bush has put in place.
Of course he can.
Of course he can.
Right when he gets there, it's all different.
But see, when you don't have a record of your own to run on, then if you make it seem as if the president is powerless to change anything, if you change presidents, it makes you look good.
Yes,
it's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
Coming up, oops, I almost said the wrong thing. Don't miss the next hour of Morning Tradition. Former Clinton Labor Secretary Robert Rice joins us, the presidential daily briefing, the liberal agenda, and more here on Air America Radio.
Throw a baseball 100 million feet.
Yeah, well, my dad can throw a football 1,000 bazillion feet. That's twice as far.
So, my dad can hold his breath underwater for 5 minutes.
That's nothing. My dad can make a 360 two-handed backward slam dunk with his eyes closed.
Yeah, well, my dad, he can make quarters come out of his nose.
Big deal. My dad can eat a whole jalapeno pepper in one bite.
Get out.
Yep. That's impossible. He'd explode. Boom!
Kids who spend time with their fathers are less likely to get in trouble or fail in school. Be there for your kids. Give them someone to brag about. Remember, it takes a man to be a dad.
My dad can smash a soda can with his head.
No way!
I saw him do it.
Cool.
Then we took him to the hospital.
Call 1-800-790-DADS for more information. A public service message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
Old way.
And hearing a great deal about frequency modulation. The new high fidelity.
New way.
Superior sound resolution with S-Plex technology. Sirius, it's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. All eyes are on the Democratic National Convention this week in Boston. Thousands of delegates arrived in New England to show their support for this year's ticket. There's no sign of discord, no sign that a floor fight is on the horizon over issues. And as the veteran Democratic Party stars took to the stage last night, they did not in the least bit disappoint. Delegates heard from Democratic National Committee Chair Terry McAuliffe, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter, and New York's own junior Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. All he praised on nominee apparent John Kerry while sharply criticizing President Bush. Among those offering praise was longtime friend of the presidential candidate, fellow crewmate of John Kerry during the Vietnam War, the Reverend David Alston of South Carolina.
It would have been easiest in an ambush to simply rake the shore with return fire and roar on down the river to safety. But Lieutenant Kerry was known for taking the fight to the enemy. I can still see him now, standing in the doorway of the pilot house, firing his M16, shouting orders through the smoke and chaos. Once, he even directed the helmsman to beach the boat right into the teeth of an ambush and pursued the attackers into the jungle on foot.
The Reverend David Alston on why he's supporting Kerry Edwards' ticket in the fall. President Bush, while on vacation at his Texas home this week, is reportedly working behind the scenes on offering a swift response to the controversial 9/11 Commission report. The President and Vice President Dick Cheney, after strongly resisting the formation of the Commission 20 months ago, have changed their tune with an embrace of the Commission's findings. They're now considering a number of measures that have been recommended by the nonpartisan panel. Reports say the White House will probably come to terms on an agreement this week in a bid that has been widely observed to upstage the Democratic National Convention in Boston. Vice President Dick Cheney is courting voters on the West Coast this week. He's due back in Washington State on Friday after attending a fundraiser event yesterday to support the Republican candidate for governor. Cheney also stopped in Oregon for a fundraiser and campaign rally. He tells supporters he and the president are confident they will win over voters in Oregon, considered a swing state. Some protesters gathered to express their opposition to the administration's policies, including environmental laws. There were also protesters sounding duck calls, a jab at Cheney's duck hunting trip with a Supreme Court justice before a high court decision on a Cheney Energy Committee. Justice Department review has revealed that over 7,000 people who should have been barred from purchasing guns were able to buy them anyway in 2002 and 2003. Government rarely prosecutes such cases, according to the Justice Department. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
It all kicks off on Monday. Yeah. Your reason for living. It keeps Bud, Coors, and Miller in business. It's the reason Cheetos, Doritos, and Tostitos were invented. Without it, you'd be helping your wife around the house on Sunday afternoon. We've been telling you it's coming, and it's the biggest thing ever. And it's about to go live. This Monday, join us for NFL Radio, exclusively on Sirius 124.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Chris wants to know if he should buy Google stock when it's offered. I'll tell him why not to after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Chris is thinking about buying Google stock at its initial offering. Past couple of days, I've been bombarded with information about the new Google IPO. What do you think about buying shares of Google? IPO, for those of you that don't know, is initial public offering. I would not put a dime in it. And that's not to say that Google isn't wonderful. However, there's an entire business landscape littered with dot-com going public failures and one or two successes. The point is, you're entering one of the most risky business landscapes that there has ever been known to man. And you're going to do that with a single stock investment, which adds even more risk. I can tell you that I own some aggressive growth stock mutual funds that invest in some dot-com stocks as a part of a whole portfolio strategy. And that lowers my risk way low. And if this Google IPO is awesome, they'll be buying into it. But I wouldn't buy it. I don't buy single stocks. You stand a better shot at the roulette wheel, dude. You really do.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Okay, go ahead.
I have something very
sound it out.
Important.
Good.
To talk to dads about reading with your children. Most kids want to read. If you spend even a little time with them every night, it will help a lot. It will help most. What's this word?
Take each letter at a time.
Motivate.
Good job.
What's it mean?
No, it means to encourage or, you know, help someone do something better.
Help motivate them to try harder, which can help them become better readers, even faster.
Excellent.
When kids read better, it builds their confidence, and that can make a big difference in a kid's life while they grow up.
You're getting really good.
Thanks, Dad.
Keep going.
Reading with
For more dad. Ideas on how to be a better dad, call 1-800-790-DADS. This has been a message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
All right, what do you want to read next?
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Yes, it's Tuesday. Democratic convention underway. We're covering it from New York City. We had Jesse, our intern, out on the street on his first big journalistic assignment. It's doing great. It's doing great out there, really capturing the feeling of the convention out in front of the building. We're going to check back with him in a little while. He was able to track down one guest and happened to be the guy.
The guy. Saying,
why don't they talk about the issues? We're fighting for our lives here. on the phone with me, a man with so many titles, it's unbelievable. Former labor secretary during Bill Clinton's first term. He's also a professor of social and economic policy at Brandeis. He's an author of the book Reason, Why Liberals Will Win the Battle for America. It's a book I read and learned. It was good. We have Robert Reich on the phone. Good morning,
well,
Secretary.
Good morning, Mark. And, Mark, how are you?
All right. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
So we want to go right out of the top here and play the soundbite for you. You watched Clinton speak last night, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was there.
Will you explain to us what he's talking about when he said this?
On Homeland Security, Democrats tried to double the number of containers at ports and airports checked for weapons of mass destruction. It cost $1 billion. It would have been paid for under our bill by asking the 200,000 millionaires in America to cut their tax cut by $5,000. Almost all 200,000 of us would like to have done that, to spend $5,000 to make all 300 million Americans safer. The measure failed. Why? Because the White House and the Republican leadership in the House of Representatives opposed it. They thought our $5,000 was more important than doubling the container checks at our ports and airports. If you agree with that, by all means, reelect them. If not, John Kerry and John Edwards are your team for the future. These policies have turned a projected $5.8 trillion surplus that we left, enough to pay for the baby boomer retirement, into a projected debt of almost $5 trillion, with over $400 billion in deficit this year and for years to come. Now, how do they pay for that deficit? First, by taking the Social Security surplus that comes in every month and endorsing the checks of working people over to me to pay for the tax cut. But it's not enough. So then they have to go borrow money. Most of it they borrow from the Chinese and the Japanese government. Sure, these countries are competing with us for good jobs, but how can we enforce our trade laws against our bankers? I mean, come on.
So, Secretary Reich, I have no, you know, this is a whole world that I don't understand. Now, we're borrowing money from China and Japan. How will you explain how all this works?
To pay for tax cuts?
Well, it's actually, I mean, Bill Clinton put a lot of figures, a lot of numbers in that speech last night.
Yes.
And the Democrats applauded. I don't know how many of them understood exactly what he was saying. But look at, the idea is very simple, and this is exactly what's happened. The Bush administration took a huge budget surplus,
yes,
something in the order of $5 trillion over 10 years,
and
basically turned it into a budget deficit,
mm-hmm,
about $8 trillion. How did they do that? By giving a huge tax cut, mostly to very rich people,
right,
earning over $200,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you balance the books when you do that, and you want to also fight a war, and you want to make sure Social Security is there? Well, you do it by borrowing a lot of money. And that's what we've been doing, particularly from the Chinese, from the Japanese, from a lot of Asian bankers who are putting a lot of money in the United States. If they didn't do that, and here's where things get a little bit technical, but bear with me, if they didn't do that, the dollar would drop relative to foreign currencies, and everything we imported from every place else in the world would cost much more.
That's if they didn't borrow money from China.
If they didn't put a lot of money in, if the foreigners, particularly the Asians, didn't put a lot of money into the United States.
Now, are there other the countries that we draw from? Do we still draw money from the Saudis?
We still draw some money from the Saudis, certainly, and some from the Europeans, but the big bankers of the United States, in terms of, you know, where a lot of the money is to prop up the dollar, prop up this economy, even though we're deep in debt, is coming mostly from Asia. And
so we owe China and Japan a lot of money right now in order to keep our economy afloat.
Absolutely.
Now, what about these numbers from yesterday? I mean, from, like, the stock market kind of crashing a little bit.
Well, the stock market is getting a little bit nervous, even though corporate profits are up. The fact of the matter is there's a big question about who's going to buy all the stuff that American factories and American businesses are producing, because American workers aren't really earning much more. In fact, the new data just came out, and again, this is very, very important, so listen very carefully. I'm going to make it as simple as possible because it's important that everybody understand this. Production workers, who make up 80% of American workers, production workers actually see their wages continue to decline in this recovery. June production workers' wages were lower than they were in May. May production workers' wages were lower than they were in April. In fact, if you compare production workers' weekly earnings today, remember I'm talking about 80% of American working people, production workers, if you look at their paychecks today and compare it to January, it's $8 a week lower than it was in January. Mm-hmm. And that's not even including the fact that employers are shifting health care costs as fast as they can onto their employees. So health care costs, health insurance costs, are going way up for most working people.
So there's no way for them to get ahead in any aspect of their life.
Not only can they not get ahead, but they can't buy. Remember, they're deep in debt. Interest rates are going up. If you've got a variable rate mortgage, if you've got credit card debt, you're paying more and more. How are you going to turn around and buy all the goods and services that all the American companies are creating? Mm-hmm. Now, that means that there's a day of reckoning, and Wall Street knows that. Wall Street is nervous. Wall Street is nervous, obviously, also about the possibility of more terrorist attacks, and doesn't know politically where we're going. But Wall Street is also very nervous that those profits, those corporate profits, cannot be sustained if Americans don't have enough money in their wallets to buy all the things that American businesses are producing.
Now, Mr. Secretary, let me ask you about this whole Chinese issue. The idea that America is borrowing money from Chinese bankers, I got to figure there's got to be another side to that. Do we have to then open up our markets further to Chinese goods? I mean, we've all seen last Christmas those $30 DVDs that were manufactured in those Chinese plants, and they flooded this market, made a tremendous amount of money, actually, for some of these companies that were using those factories. Does that hurt American factory workers, and do we, in fact, end up opening our markets further because we borrowed so much money from them?
Well, in a way, that's right. American factory workers are a vanishing species, and that's partly because everything can be made much more cheaply in places like China. And the dollar is not... Remember I was talking a moment ago about the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the dollar was dropping relative to foreign currencies, everything that we made would be cheaper to everybody in other countries, and everything that they made would be more expensive to us. The dollar is not dropping because Asian banks, particularly places like China and Japan, want to keep the dollar up there so that they can sell more stuff to us.
I got it. Can you stay with us over the break, Secretary?
Yeah.
Great. We're talking to Secretary Robert Reich, ex-Labor Secretary for Clinton, and we'll be back in a second on Air America Radio.
Intelligent people live everywhere. People like you and me, interested in art, film, politics, and culture. So why doesn't Hollywood think so? Hi, I'm Larry Meistrich, founder of Film Movement and producer of films such as Sling Blade and You Can Count on Me. More importantly, I'm a busy father of three who lives in the suburbs. Most quality independent and foreign films don't open in a theater near you, especially if you live outside of New York or Los Angeles. Should you be culturally punished for having a backyard? I create a Film Movement for anyone who wants to see films other than the blockbusters playing at your local multiplex. Each month, subscribers to Film Movement receive a new film to own on DVD by signing up at AirAmericaRadio.com. It's like getting the best of Cannes and Sundance delivered to your door each month. Subscribe through AirAmericaRadio.com and receive one of my favorite films, O.T. Our Town, for free. O.T. Our Town is a documentary about the power of education in America. It is a film that deserves to be seen by everyone. Choose to see films that matter. Subscribe to Film Movement today at AirAmericaRadio.com and help support Air America.
Hi there, your old pal Bill, sitting poolside and sucking down a cold one. Whoa, I just love summer. Now the Democratic Convention's coming up, so Sirius Cracked Up Comedy's doing the Demo Cracked Up Convention. Get it? Demo Cracked Up? That's pretty damn funny. 3 days of the best political humor. That's right, Monday through Wednesday on Sirius Cracked Up Comedy 146. Hey, I hope no one's making fun of me.
This is your Icicle Insight on the Environment.
Russell Tray, my guest, the book Politics, Pollution, and Pandas. 1970, you were the first chair of the Presidential Council on Environmental Quality. 1973, you headed the EPA. How has our perspective shifted regarding the environment?
Well, I think at the beginning, nobody knew what the environment was. When I told my parents that I was resigning as a tax court judge to become a full-time environmentalist, they thought two things. One, that I was crazy, and secondly, they didn't know what I meant. Now, that has all changed. We had a huge upsurge of public attention to the environment during my main career period, and now we see, I think, you know, that public excitement has died down. Most polls show that the American public really cares about the environment. However, the priority today is not what it was back in the 70s.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
When is the right time to start talking with children about marijuana? Before they see or hear any pro-use messages or images. Before anyone their age has used it. Before anyone encourages them to try it. Before it becomes their first step towards substance abuse, school problems, health and safety risks, and illegal activity. Reality check. It's never too soon to talk to your kids about marijuana. For tips on getting started, call 1-800-729-6686.
Talking to the former Labor Secretary during Bill Clinton's first term, Robert Reich, whose book, Reason, Why Liberals Will Win the Battle for America, is out. And very good reading.
It's available on our site, is it?
Sure, sure. You can get it there. It's also a very informative about sort of redesigning the American workforce in light of outsourcing. I want to ask you, ex-Secretary Reich, what are the downsides of this borrowing money from China? What if they call us on the debt?
Well, they could. I mean, any day they could just say, you know, the American dollar is a bad deal. We just don't want to invest that much money. We don't want to pour that much money into the United States. We're taking our money out. Now, what happens then is we're in trouble. Remember, we have a huge budget deficit. We have a gigantic trade deficit. Most of our workers are themselves personally deep in debt. What happens then is the dollar plunges relative to other currencies. There's no way we can prop up the dollar. The dollar is being propped up by Asian banks.
So
the dollar drops, and that means that everything we buy from every place else in the world suddenly costs a lot more money. The good news, of course, is that everything they buy from us is much cheaper.
So this gives China an awful lot of power, doesn't it, over us?
Well, it gives China a lot of power, other Asian banks a lot of power. But remember, this has been going on for some time. We have been supported in our habits. That is our huge budget deficit and our trade deficit and our own personal buying habits. We've been supported, nobody knows it, but supported by about $1.5 billion a day coming in from foreigners.
Oh, my
God.
Not
just Asians, but foreigners all over the world.
How come people don't know this? It feels like everyone should know this. Is this why Bill Clinton brought it up?
Well, it's important that everybody knows it.
Right.
Bill Clinton wasn't exactly the first politician to bring it up, but he is probably the most articulate politician about these things, and people need to know this. When George W. Bush prances around the world saying, if you're not with us, you're against us, we're going to do it our way, he is not talking about the fact that we are completely and utterly dependent on foreign sources of money. If they decide not to go it our way, if they decide they're angry with the United States, if they don't like our bullying, well, they have a big tool. They can just say, goodbye, we're taking our money and putting it elsewhere.
Mr. Secretary, why do you think the former president brought this particular issue up last night during the speech?
I think he really is angry about the fact that during the Clinton administration, and I know I was there, we worked hard to bring the budget deficit down. In fact, I was a fiscal dove. I wasn't a fiscal hawk. I argued that we were trying to do too much fiscal cutting, tax increases and spending cuts. We were not investing enough in education and health care. But he said, and he believed, it was important to get that deficit down. And so by the end of the Clinton administration, there was that huge budget surplus. What did George W. Bush do with that budget surplus? Did he pour it into health care? Did he pour it into education? Did he pour it into getting the deficit down? No. He gave it away, most of it in tax cuts to very rich people.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Secretary, what do you think? I want you to kind of put on your prognosticator's hat right now. What do you think George W. Bush is going to do with the economy to try and make it look better as we get into the heaviest part of this campaign season?
Well, there's not very much he can do to try to make it look better. He is going to say that jobs are coming back. That's what we're going to hear from him over and over and over again. He's going to say his tax cuts made the economy stronger and jobs are coming back. Well,
but it's still a net loss, isn't it?
Well, in fact, we've lost jobs. We lost over 1 million jobs since the start of the Bush administration. It's true that jobs are just beginning to come back, but the kind of jobs that are coming back are nothing to write home about. They're jobs that are mostly low-paying jobs. They pay, on average, average about $9,000 a year, less than the jobs we used to have before Bush came to office. They're jobs that don't have health care attached to them. They're jobs that require many more hours of people working in order to stay up to what they were before. You know, a lot of Americans have become too discouraged even to look for work. So he's going to try to make it sound as if we're in a very strong economic recovery. The truth is, there's no recovery in terms of average working people.
Well, let's talk about outsourcing for a minute, because it's sort of a weird, contentious, you know, wedge issue in the liberal world. Now, you say in your book that outsourcing is inevitable and somewhat necessary.
Outsourcing, insourcing, look, we're in a global economy.
Right.
And it doesn't matter where companies are headquartered. They will build jobs and put jobs in the United States, and there are lots. I mean, you know, my publisher, Random House, is a German company. You
sure.
know, most of the 7-Eleven, you know, or take Store 24. I mean, they're, all of these things are companies that are headquartered elsewhere around the world. They are putting jobs in the United States. The real issue is, are we getting good jobs?
Right.
Are
right.
we getting the jobs that are going to pay well?
Right. How is Kerry going to address this? How should he address it?
Well, he's going to address it by, number one, building new industries such as renewable energy resources.
Mm-hmm.
Very important that we not be dependent on Middle Eastern oil, and we can also generate a lot of new jobs by doing that. Number two, he says he's going to take away the tax breaks for companies that put jobs abroad. No reason that they should have tax incentives for putting jobs abroad if they're American companies. I think that's very important. And number three, he's going to, as we talked about a moment ago, get that deficit under control so, in fact, there is money enough to invest in new companies and new jobs.
So how should he sell it in his speech this week?
Well, selling it is something that I, you know, I'm not a great wordsmith, and I'm not going to.
You're pretty good.
Well, I'm fairly good, but I'm not a great wordsmith.
Okay.
He has great wordsmiths. I don't know exactly how he's going to do it, but I think he's going to emphasize that the only way that, you know, he's going to talk about the contrast between the Clinton economics and the Bush economics. He's going to say basically, under Clinton, 22 million new jobs were created. Under Bush, we've lost over a million jobs. And if you like that, if you feel, you know, if you're better off today than you were 4 years ago, then vote for George W. Bush. But if you really feel we were doing well 4 years ago, particularly economically, then vote for me. I'm going to continue those same policies. And by the way, if you're earning over $200,000, I'm going to roll back your tax cut to what your taxes were under the Clinton administration. Don't tell me that was too high, because under the Clinton administration, you were doing better than you're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Final quick question on a personal note, Secretary Rice. There's been some talk that you might decide to run for elective office from the state of Massachusetts. Any truth to it?
Probably not. You know, I'm focusing on the Kerry administration right now. Haven't honestly thought about running again at all. We've got to get Kerry elected. We've got to get Kerry and Edwards elected. This is the most important election in my lifetime. In fact, I think it's the most important election since 1932, when Franklin D. Roosevelt took on Herbert Hoover.
So if he wins, you wouldn't think about running for a Senate seat?
I honestly don't know. I doubt it.
Right. Thank you very much, Secretary Rice. I really appreciate you coming, as always.
Okay, Mark.
Yes,
Mark,
you take care.
To talk to you.
All right.
The book is Reason, Why Liberals Will Win the Battle for America. It's a good primer, do they call it? A primer? And I found it very enlightening, and it really defines what modern liberalism looks like in terms of, you know, where we're coming from here. We'll do the president's palm pilot in a minute. Or no, I've got time now.
You got time.
Okay.
I want to see Robert Rice run for office, by the way.
He's like such a great talker, and he's
so sharp.
I'd
love to help run his campaign. We could start a consultancy, Mayor.
Okay.
You and I. Maron and Riley. The two marks.
Are the hours going to be different?
Yeah.
Not that I'm complaining. I'm very happy.
We get invited to all the A-list parties.
We get to see the sunrise every day without being up all night. Here we go. Presidential Palm Pilot coming in from Ramon. And President, here's a schedule for Bush today, 9 a.m. Wake up in Crawford in pain. Take painkillers for yesterday's bike wreck. Damn armadillos. 9, 10 a.m. Take painkillers for last night's Democratic speeches. Damn Clintons. 9:30 a.m. Call Karl Rove. See if we can use this bike wreck to capture undecided clumsy voters in swing states. 11 p.m. Continue reading 9/11 report. It's like a mystery. This Bush character doesn't know anything. I wonder how it's going to turn out. 12 noon. Continue to lay low during Democratic convention. I am the best president at laying low ever. Better than Reagan, even. 1 p.m. Have dinner with Pops. Ask him if being a one-term president is all that bad.
3 p.m., watch advanced copy of Manchurian Candidate. I'm surprised no one's ever thought to film this story before. 5 p.m., watch Clinton's speech again. Damn, I wish I was a Democrat. Then I could screw whoever I wanted. 9 p.m., bedtime. Fall out of bed? Damn armadillos. 9, 10 p.m., listen to Singing Jackalope. Think happy thought headline. Quote, Kerry injured in even stupider bike accident than Bush. End quote.
Impossible.
No, absolutely. We're going to take some calls, I believe. It looks like people are calling. Robert Reich always gets people excited.
Yeah, he does.
866-303-2270. 866-303-2270.
We got people calling from all over the world.
Let's take a call before we go to break. Leonard in Boston, what's up?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? I got two comments I'd like to make.
Okay.
First of all, I'm sorry Robert Reich isn't still there, because my concern is how in the world do we pay back the interest on that money we're borrowing from Japan and China? At what interest rate and how much are we paying in interest? That can we possibly ever catch up to paying those loans back?
Yeah, I wish he was here, because I have no point of reference to address that.
It must be just an unbelievable rate of money that is sucking out of our pockets to pay that back, and maybe we'll never ever be able to do that. Just doing everything we can do to pay back the interest.
Well, maybe we can go to one of those places where you can consolidate all your loans into one lump sum.
That's what it's called.
Now, you're up in Boston, Leonard. Are you anywhere near the convention? Have you been inconvenienced by the convention?
No, I'm staying away just because I fear crowds. And I don't want to get caught in that mayhem, although I wish I did. But I work for myself. I work out of my home. And the other point is that I work out of my home, and a lot of my clients are nonprofit organizations, and they are crying so much for money.
Oh, yeah, right.
I'm in the printing business, and I do work for them. And
We got to go, Leonard. I'm sorry you couldn't finish, but we got a hard out here. So you take care, and
thanks a lot for calling. No, we appreciate it. Coming up, the Presidential Daily Briefing, the Liberal Agenda, and more of you on the phones at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270 here on Air America Radio. Give us a call at 866-303-2270, or you can check us out at morningsedition.com.
Attention Democrats everywhere. You've heard the commercials before. The Democratic National Convention is upon us. The presidential election is closer than you think, and now have we got an offer for you.
It's the George W. You're Fired T-shirt sale.
That's right. It's the George W. You're Fired T-shirts you've heard about, and they're all on sale now. For only $9.99, you can own one of the hottest T-shirts in the land and wear your convictions right on the front of your chest. George W. You're Fired, on sale for $9.99. 100% heavyweight cotton, extra large, $9.99. All sizes, just
$9.99. It's the George W. You're Fired T-shirt sale.
Visit WYOUREFIRED.com and act now. That's WYOUREFIRED.com and place your order today. The hottest T-shirt in the land is on sale and waiting for you at WYOUREFIRED.com. Price does not include shipping and handling, so spread the word. It's the
George W. You're Fired T-shirt sale.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The Democrats are in center stage this week with ongoing party's national convention in Boston. The get-together has been the focus of tributes to the nominee apparent and sharp constructive criticism of the incumbent. Many are saying a vote for Kerry would be a return to the Clinton years of a blossoming economy and a cut in the loss of jobs. President Bush is getting ready to unveil a swift response to the 9/11 Commission report on the heels of its release. Bush has been reading the report and says a reminds him of a mystery novel. Bush says it's well written. Whoopi Goldberg has been relegated to the side stage by the Democrats, saying her recent criticism of the Bush White House is too radioactive and may take away from the Kerry candidacy. And revenge may be frowned upon, but the urge to extract a pound of flesh is primed in our genes, according to researchers. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
I'll take the Mayhem in the A.M. breakfast special. What do I get with that? No. The Mayhem in the A.M. The Great Morning Show, it's... What the... No, the one with Steak Shapiro, Mike Bell, and Nick Cellini. No, no, it's guy talk. Morning sports with an edge. Oh, my God, come on.
Mayhem in the AM. Sports talk anyone can understand. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on Sirius Sports Action 123.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Ameridet has stopped paying Ron's bills, and creditors are hounding him. I'll explain why after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Ron is using Ameridet, but creditors aren't getting their money.
Been listening to you and doing a lot of the stuff that you talk about. One of the things that we started doing before we found out about you is we went to Ameridet, a debt consolidation place.
Oh, yuck.
We've been with them for a little over a year, haven't had any problems, and then this month we find out that three of our creditors, they didn't receive their payment on time, and they're charging us late fee.
Shocking. Are you aware that they filed bankruptcy?
No, I'm not.
Ameridet filed Chapter 11 about 3 weeks ago.
Oh.
So don't send them any more money.
Okay.
Do they have an electronic access to your checking account?
Yeah, they do.
Block it today.
Okay.
Put a stop payment on it as if it were a bad check and block it today. Do not allow them to have any more of your money. You are going to have to take this bull by the horns and run with it now, sir.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Edition. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
Taking your calls at 866-303-2270. Rachel Maddow is going to come in a little early and chat with us as we kind of roll over into her show. We got Jesse on the street covering the convention here in New York City. And we got Michael on the phone listening to our new station in Miami on WINZ. Good morning, Michael.
What's up?
Hey, well, how you doing, guys?
Good.
What's up?
Yeah, no, I wanted to make a comment with regards to what Reich was saying. I think it's a little misleading when someone implies that so many jobs were lost, but when they fail to point out that a lot of those jobs were losses due to the dot-com breakdown that occurred, many of those well.
How many of those jobs?
Well, I don't have the exact figures. I am not by any means a financial analyst.
Well,
I know that it was as you know, many, many companies that were paper companies.
What's your point?
Well, you know, it's somewhat misleading, and definitely, if you would take Greenspan for his word, which Greenspan knows much more about the economy than any one of us does.
He sort of makes the economy happen, doesn't he?
He did say that the Bush tax cuts did help fuel the economy and have created the upstream of the economy's improvement.
Well, what Rice was saying is that the jobs are not good jobs, they're not stable jobs, they're not jobs with health care, and we're still a million jobs in the hole, and even if the numbers continue at the rate they're going, Bush is not going to make the numbers that much different. I appreciate your call, but I don't think you have any
real
information.
Yeah, I mean, plus, you know, when people say, well, those jobs were dot-com jobs, well, how many of them were dot-com
Yeah, but there's
jobs?
Nothing wrong with dot-com jobs. I mean, a lot of those jobs were valid.
Well, we don't know that they all disappeared either.
No, absolutely.
Some of them did, yes. Admittedly, some dot-com jobs left. But I don't think that the dot-com jobs were all of the jobs that were lost in this last recession. I think we can safely say that.
And whatever Greenspan said about these tax cuts helping, even if it still seems pretty temporary, according to Secretary Reich.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, we got Pamela in New Jersey. How are you?
Hi, Pamela.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Hey.
I have to say that I adore you both. I just love you immensely, and I'm so glad you're there.
Thank you so much.
First of all, Mark, I was at your 8:30 show, so you're not brilliant.
Oh,
love
thanks.
It.
Thanks for coming.
And I don't have a southern accent, but I am a native of Alabama, mm-hmm. You know, living here in New Jersey. And the opening night of Fahrenheit, I was down there with my cousin and said, you know, there's no way it's going to be playing here. But we were so surprised to see it in the paper.
Oh, yeah.
So we went to saw it, and there was a great showing. It was playing at two theaters, and just so many people there, and it was just It was wonderful.
And yeah, yeah. It made $100 million, so it must be playing pretty much everywhere at this point.
Yeah, and everywhere people want to make a profit running a movie theater.
But you know what's funny about big old Michael Moore is I saw him, they cut to him up in the balcony when Clinton was speaking. He was sitting next to Jimmy Carter and Rosalynn Carter, and you just saw Michael Moore with his arm crossed, like, you know, I am the conscience of the entire Democratic / progressive movement. Please say something that will appease me, little man. Let us not mistake who is in charge of the cultural discourse now, Mr. Clinton.
Jabba the filmmaker.
Yeah, he was something. That was my buddy Bert. Hey, Bert, what's up?
What's up, Bert?
How you doing?
How are you guys?
Good.
I just wanted to comment on a couple things. One, what that guy just said about the dot-coms, I don't know if that covered a lot of jobs.
Right.
And number two,
right.
He stimulated the economy, borrowed billions and trillions of dollars,
right.
$500 billion in debt. So, I mean, that's going to definitely stimulate the jobs, stimulate the economy, but it's borrowed money.
Yeah, it doesn't have any bearing on actually making the economy better.
Yeah, besides, with borrowed money, there's always the famous day of reckoning when you have to pay them off. When you get into debt, sooner or later, you have to pay the debt. And, this country is in a situation where we have been, and I mean, before Bill Clinton, people were really worried about the amount of debt that we were piling up. Ronald Reagan, huge increase in the national debt.
Yeah.
And, people weren't apparently paying attention.
Well, it's never been bigger than now. I guess that guy wanted to make another point, which I wanted to make the other day. We kind of cut him off a little too early. That happens sometimes. But when we talk about Kerry, I was talking about Kerry yesterday, and when they mischaracterize him as, voting for the war in Iraq. I mean, a lot of these senators voted to authorize, to give the president the permission to authorize a war, if need be. Not, it doesn't mean that they voted to go to war.
Yeah, and people forget that at the time that vote was taken, there was still some hope on the part of certainly some people in Congress that Saddam Hussein would comply with the UN demands, the UN resolutions, and in fact open up. And he had said, I believe, that the weapons inspectors would have unfettered access. So there were certainly reasons to authorize war, but a lot of the people who voted for the authorization did not think the country was headed to war at that point, certainly not without some consensus among allies.
Right. Sarah in New York was in an LIB. What's up?
Hey, Sarah.
How you guys?
Good.
Thank you, Mark, for that point you just made. Nobody says he didn't vote for the war. He voted for war powers for the president, which the president then abused.
Right.
But what I wanted to talk about was spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Was all the people that I heard last night who took Hillary and Bill, I mean, those guys were great.
They were great.
They were great.
The
speeches were wonderful.
Really, really, and moving
and
candid and honest.
Yes, and they were. You couldn't be more generous.
Mm-hmm.
And if one more person says, "Well, but do the Clintons really want Kerry to win? Because then what about Hillary? In 2008?
Yeah.
Does nobody get that somebody invented that?
Of course. Yeah, we were talking about
that earlier. Yeah, we were talking about that earlier.
I'm sorry, I was at the laundry.
No, no,
oh,
no.
That's right.
What's going on here is a situation where people believe they can divide and conquer. They can divide Bill and Hillary Clinton against John Kerry, divide Hillary's ambition against the possible ambitions of John Edwards in the future, and make it seem like the party is fighting itself.
And Bill nailed them. He nailed it. He said, they need this country to be divided. We don't.
That's absolutely right.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Yeah, that's absolutely right. So you're saying that some of these spoilers are actually coming from the other side.
Well, see, there are still Clinton haters in the media, quiet as is kept.
How about in the Democratic Party?
There are a couple of Clinton haters in the Democratic Party, but they're more from without than from within.
Absolutely. Let's take some more calls after this. Air America Radio, call us up, 866-303-2270. We'll talk to you in a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, weighing in at 380 pounds, Senators Kerry and Edwards. And in this corner, weighing in with whatever's on their mind, the current White House champs, George and Dick.
The
convention's on, and the fight's just beginning.
You call yourself a bunch of
it's due to the rhetorical Rottweiler. Catch full live coverage on Sirius Left, Right, Patriot, and Outkick. The DNC's on Sirius.
This is your Icicle Insight on the environment.
Russell Tray, my guest, the book Politics, Pollution, and Pandas. 1970, you were the first chair of the Presidential Council on Environmental Quality. 1973, you headed the EPA. How has our perspective shifted regarding the environment?
Well, I think at the beginning, nobody knew what the environment was. When I told my parents that I was resigning as a tax court judge to become a full-time environmentalist, they thought two things. One, that I was crazy, and secondly, they didn't know what I meant. So that has all changed. We had a huge upsurge of public attention to the environment during my main career period, and now we see, I think, you know, that public excitement has died down. Most polls show that the American public really cares about the environment. However, the priority today is not what it was back in the 70s.
This is your Icicle Insight on Sirius.
All right, your 4 years old son, ready for the big leagues. Put that on, buddy. There you go, helmet.
Silly head.
Okay, that's right, with thigh guards. Now don't forget your mouth guard. You don't want to be losing teeth in your first game. Well, they're baby teeth, but yeah, put it in it.
Daddy.
Don't let them worry you. They may be over 200 pounds and kind of mean looking, but you're ready for them. Just run through them. Here's the ball. Run!
Daddy?
Don't look at me. Run with it. Go, boy. Run!
But I could get hurt.
No pain, no gain. Now run!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult. So why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Ah, you should have sprayed on them.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
My opinion about the world counts, and I have something to say.
Young people today are acutely aware of the world around them. And optimists give these youth a chance to be heard through their Optimist Essay Contest.
I want to express my feelings, and I want the world to know what I think.
Our local optimists are giving young people that opportunity through the Optimist Essay Contest. Optimists, bringing out the best in kids.
Here we are, taking calls, 866-303-2270. People are excited. We are Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. That's Mark Riley there.
Good morning.
Rachel Maddow is here.
Hey!
Woohoo!
And now we're going to do our presidential daily briefing. This is the highly classified top secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is entitled, Democratic Convention Undermines Culture of Fear. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that despite our best efforts, the Democrats have been allowed to stage their convention. It is difficult to overestimate the damage caused by primetime speeches by such known info-terrorists as Al Gore, Hillary Clinton, the capo himself, Bill Clinton. To contain the damage, we feel it may be necessary to proceed to phase two. Phase two involves a radical intensification of the climate of fear. We are prepared to release vague but dire warnings about a group called Al-Qaeda 2, a new and improved version of the popular terrorist standby. Al-Qaeda 2 will be capable of any and all terrorist activities necessary to secure your re-election. At your command, we are prepared to simulate a minor terrorist incident in a small Midwestern town with no more than a few casualties and blame it on Al-Qaeda 2. We can assure you their rhetoric will be shrill enough to win back the swing states. Also in development, Taliban 2, and if necessary, Saddam 2. Please note, if these possibilities are exhausted, we may have to go back to blaming the Indians. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security. You like that one?
Good stuff.
So how do you feel about being here alone with us?
Well, Mark, just off the air, Mark Riley was just saying, you know, you're wearing my Boston hat.
Yeah.
But factually, if you just notice, the Boston has just a B.
Yeah.
That's because we are the B team.
Yeah, that's
right. Oh, is that what
it
is?
Yes, that's what it
is. But we're the most important because we're holding the home fort down.
Yes, we're the anchor, I mean. Not the B team, we're the anchor.
Yes, the anchor of
the
network.
Let's catch the next Amtrak to Boston and crash the Air America booth.
That's right. You know, we are the black
sheep. I'm not playing the B team stuff.
I ain't either.
I'm not playing that. This woman's got a PhD. I graduated high school.
I have a bachelor's degree.
And she hosts Unfiltered. We host Morning's Edition. We're not chopped liver here. We're fighting for our lives.
We're fighting for our lives. Why don't they talk about the issues? Oh, my God. Have you heard that guy?
No. Oh, why don't they talk about the issues?
Issues, yeah.
That's
yeah.
our guy.
I Is think he our, probably calls you, too.
Our boss, you mean? That guy? Or our listener.
No, there you go. No, yeah. no.
So we have a listener.
What did you think of the Clinton speech?
You know, the politics for me is kind of my religion.
Yes.
So, you know, all they have to do is play the national anthem and show people waving big foam fingers, and I get teary.
Oh, yeah.
He could have said anything. Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. That part, even the part about nuclear weapons. Yeah, Bill. And he's saying, save me, or send me. I would.
Go ahead. You can go.
Can he run again? Let's have that guy.
Yeah.
We looked into whether he could run as the VP.
And he can't.
Well.
He could.
He maybe could.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. The Constitution's a little fuzzy on the issue.
Is this a little bit like a felon getting to vote again or something? I mean, is there, you have to go through all kinds of complicated stuff here. By the way, you know, Jeb Bush really stiffed people in Florida that way, too.
Yeah, he did something weird with the paperwork.
He called himself streamlining the process, but in the process, he makes it more difficult.
Yeah.
For felons to get the right to vote.
Oh, the clemency thing.
Yeah, the clemency
thing. Yeah, the clemency thing.
They could just fill out a form, and then they said, no, they don't need a form. What they need is they need to be sent a letter. By the clemency board.
Would you have to ask for the letter to be sent?
So he made it more difficult when it was about to be easier. 700,000 ex-felons in Florida.
That's a lot.
My favorite
I don't live there. The
New York connection, as they said. For example, somebody who was a felon, was convicted in New York, and then moves to Florida. What Florida needs in order to let that person vote down there is a letter from New York saying that person's voting rights have been restored. Well, New York doesn't do that. New York just automatically
happens.
There's no paper generated.
We need to get
it's a paperless right.
Yeah, we need to get a felons for carry movement going.
By the way, you know, there's only seven states in the country that deny convicted felons the right to vote. Florida is one of them. But, I mean, it's not like, you know, all 50 states have the same rules and regulations. And it seems like Florida is preparing to do, in 2004, what they did in 2000.
Absolutely.
Except in the case of Hispanic felons, who in Florida, unlike the rest of the country, tend to vote Republican.
They tend to vote because of
the Cuban connection. And so the Hispanic felons, they were completely left off that list. There were 61 of them.
Everything they can to accommodate the Cuban felons.
Yeah.
We got a call from Mark in Minnesota. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, Mark.
Well, thanks very much for you guys being there and keep it up and get it syndicated out to more stations.
We're going to try.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks.
I just wanted to make a comment on this continual drumbeat of the flip-flop of Kerry. I voted for it or what? I voted against it. And how come nobody ever clarifies it in the fact that the Republicans voted against it, then they voted for it. And they voted against it when the cost was going to be provided by a little sacrifice by those cutting back $87 billion out of the tax cuts for the top 1%. And they voted against that, and when they had an opportunity to vote for it, putting it on the backs of everybody else, that's what they did. So they flip-flopped on that issue totally.
Oh, yeah, they're big flip-floppers. They're definitely, thanks. I got that right here, Mark. I got it right here. It's in December 13, 2002, Bush administration says Iraqi oil will pay for invasion. September 7, 2003, Bush asks for $87 billion more to pay for invasion. February 2, 2004, Bush spokesman denies need for additional funds for the rest of 2004. And then May 5, 2004, Bush requests additional funds for Iraq for 2004.
The other side of this, too, is that actually nobody voted for this war. What they voted for was to invade a country that had weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Right.
Was to invade a country that was going to have the smoking gun was going to be a mushroom cloud. We voted to invade a country that had weapons of mass destruction. So, Mm-hmm. Nobody voted for this war. We voted for a lie.
The president duped the Senate, and these guys voted to authorize a war that was based on a complete fabrication.
And remember, when he went to the Congress, the consensus was that there was going to be a consensus, that there were going to be other nations involved with this, that there was going to be a coalition, real coalition,
they got
soldiers from someplace else.
Latvia, the Philippines. we'll be back after a minute. Unfiltered's coming up next. Thanks for stopping by, Rachel.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for
She'll
having
be
me.
On her show in a couple minutes here on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Dr. Gary Gordon, Chief Medical Director at the world-renowned Gordon Research Institute, describes exciting new research guaranteed to solve your hair problem.
New data released by the FDA indicates that the body chemical dehydrotestosterone, commonly known as DHT, is the leading cause of hair loss. At our institute, we studied numerous hair loss treatments and found that Folinex is the most effective solution for stimulating new hair growth in balding areas. If you want to stop DHT from causing any further hair loss, then I strongly recommend that you try Folinex now. Folinex's DHT blocker has been used successfully for over 8 years by tens of thousands of men and women. Folinex is powerful enough to regrow hair on virtually anyone, we guarantee it.
Folinex is available for a limited time at half the price of other competitors. Folinex is guaranteed to work for you. So order risk-free now by calling 800-256-8214. That's 800-256-8214. Call 800-256-8214.
He's been around for more than 400 million years. He'll go through 20,000 teeth in his lifetime. He can grow up to 45 feet long and weigh 30,000 pounds. And he can go 3 months without eating. But then he's going to be really, really hungry. No, it's not your brother-in-law. It's a shark, silly. It's Shark Week on Sirius Discovery Channel Radio, 135.
Ever seen a hornet, Shelly?
No, ma'am.
Oh, well, you're fine. What are you waiting for? They've built a nest outside your window. See?
No.
You will when you climb 15 feet up this ladder to get rid of them. Take this insecticide and broom and send those stinging meanies packing.
What if I fall? I could get hurt.
Oh, you know about gravity already. You're so smart. Oh, go, 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 go. The hornets are waiting.
Wait a minute, dear. Hornets hate object noises.
Yeah, try not to swallow too many.
Get away!
Now knock that nest out of the park.
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seat belts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
I can't see! Are they biting me?
Oh, that's so cute. No, honey, hornets don't bite, silly. They sting.
Ow!
For more information, go to boostersuit.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Community groups do so much, especially helping to keep kids away from drugs. But do you know there's a way to make community groups stronger? It's called a community coalition. Community coalitions help local groups get together and get more done. Find out how your group can get involved at helpyourcommunity.org. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
We're almost done here with
almost.
Our show. And Rachel is going to come in and do Unfiltered. Nice for her to stop by. But you know, right now I'm very excited. We've got our correspondent out on the streets here in New York City covering the Democratic National Convention. How's it going out there, Jesse? Things picking up, I imagine, by now, right?
Well, we actually have massive traffic concerns at the moment, but whether or not that's due to the convention in Boston or the fact that I'm currently in New York City is largely debatable.
Well, I mean, I think it's got to be because of the convention. You're covering the convention, so that's what the traffic's for. It's for the convention.
Right.
We got to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
Have you been able to talk to any politicians?
Well, we actually have this one character who's been pestering me for that. Hold on. Let me pass this off.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Hello.
Hey, Mark.
How are you?
How's it doing, buddy?
President Clinton.
You found me.
Yeah. How'd you get back so quick? Weren't you just in Boston? Well, I don't
Yeah, well, you know, I got private stuff. You know, I'm a millionaire.
mentioned that last night on the phone. I'm all blinged up.
Blinged up? Uh-oh.
Oh, I was good last night, wasn't I?
Yeah, you said you weren't. You would be willing to give $5,000 back if you had to help the country.
I'll do whatever I need to do, Mark. I've always been willing to go the extra mile. You know me, baby. I'll get back to New York to hear Morning Sedition. I count on you guys for all my news.
Well, thanks a lot, man. How did it feel to have your wife opening for you?
Well, it sounds dirty, but I guess it's not. And for change, it's not me saying it. You two are trouble. Oh, she's fantastic, you know. She's even better when she's in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she's still up there, huh?
Yeah, I got stuff to do here, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You been up all night or what?
Well... Or what? Been quite a bit of or what? I am such a rock star after last night. I surprised myself.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Did you sign a lot of autographs? A lot of people following you around?
You know, people are eager to hear my agenda, and I am eager to give it to them.
Well, thanks as always, President Clinton. It's always great having you on the show, and you take care of yourself.
All right, buddy. See you later.
All right.
Thanks, Jesse.
Nice work, Jesse.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that was great. Now, see, look at that. It paid off, man. I told you, man, covering the convention in New York was going to pay off. There's a big story that you just got.
Just some reporting for Morning Sedition.
Wow. We'll see you tomorrow, maybe. Wow. Jesse's busy, man. He's busy on the street.
Out. Yeah, we got to get him back out there again. That really paid off today.
Yeah. Well, by the way, he didn't go all the way to 125th.
I think he's just right out in front of the building. I think. There's our liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound. Get your pens and papers and whatever. Here you go. One. Lobby to carve both Clintons onto Mount Rushmore. Wait, carve all three Clintons onto Mount Clinton. Yeah. Two, ask Clinton, Carter, Gore, and Edwards to give Kerry Southern lessons. Three, praise Gore for last night's dignified speech, but tell him the real money is in the Angry Al speech. How dare they! Four, praise Carter's speech, but remind him that the phrase Habitat for Humanity is totally sexist. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, Dukakis Ferraro in 2008. Just think about it. How dare they? That's it. That's it for our show.
Is that it?
That's it for us.
No more time?
Coming up. No more time. Till tomorrow, Mark.
Till tomorrow. Yes, and we will be back tomorrow. Yes. Coming up on tomorrow's Morning Sedition, Washington Post columnist E.J. Dion and the president of the National Organization for Women, Kim Gandy, on why women and those who love women should vote for John Kerry. That's tomorrow's Morning Sedition, only on Air America Radio. Bye.
Bye, Riley.